Cheese. Recorded live.
Welcome, everybody, tonight to the ProThink Radio Show Worldwide Live. This is your host, Mike Delaney. Tonight we're going to have an excellent show. We're sorry for the late start. We're getting in about 20 minutes late here due to some severe connection technical difficulties here. But I want to go ahead and bring on the two guests tonight, which are going to be discussing the differences of opinions and facts. And then, I'm sorry about the feedback here. The show tonight is going to be on the differences that are going around regarding Hitler, his intentions, and things of those sort. I want to start off by introducing Jim Condit as a guest tonight, who's produced a film, Adolf Hitler, The Final Solution for Adolf Hitler, which can be seen at HitlerDVD.com. And then we also have our guest, William Fink, tonight, who has a website, Christogenia.org, and also mk.christogenia.org, which is his Mein Kampf project. Jim, I'm going to go ahead and bring you up tonight and let you start off with some of the facts and some of the issues that you raise regarding Hitler and some things that haven't been presented as far as what you believe to be true or not.
Okay. My name is Jim Condit, Jr. My dad's still alive at 81, so I like to not let him be blamed necessarily for everything I say, you know. But, in 1999, actually, a doctor who now passed away, Dr. Paul Rusnowski, who had been researching World War II for many, many years, called me and said he had some information that he didn't know how he would get it out if I didn't do it. He said, because on the one hand, you have the establishment mainstream view that Hitler was a walking demon, and everything he did and everything the Nazis do were like straight out of hell. And then the other view was kind of the revisionist view, subtly promoted, I would say, by David Irving, who I have a lot of respect for his books and research, The Spotlight, now the American Free Press, and many other either revisionist and or neo-Nazi outlets, that Hitler was the greatest Western leader of the last few centuries, that he was what he appeared to be a super German patriot. And Rusnowski's information, I think, blows away both of those positions. It doesn't necessarily mean that Hitler wasn't sincere in a lot of things he was doing as far as what his own beliefs were. But it does, what I say is that the pieces we've brought forth, which are laying around in mainstream history books and all kinds of different places, but not interpreted, it allows you to see the entire picture of World War II. If you don't have this information of the Nazi-Zionist connection, and that Hitler, by all logic and pointers, was in deals with the Rothschilds and the Warburgs from the beginning of his rise to power, then you have to leave all kinds of things to the side in World War II and just say, that doesn't make sense. That can't explain that. That doesn't make sense. One of the two most prominent are Dunkirk, Hitler letting the British go at Dunkirk early in the war instead of capturing them and ending the war with Britain right then, and also Barbarossa, Operation Barbarossa, where the Germans were within a reasonably few amount of miles. I can't remember if it was 50 or 100. And Hitler issued the order to stop rather than take Moscow, end communism maybe, end Stalinism, and of course you always want to take the enemy's capital when you're, and they were stopped, and the German general said, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to starve here. And Hitler said, no you won't, but they did. The German army there starved and was defeated because they were stopped there. This type of thing is, and many, many other things we bring in the video, you just have to leave them aside and say, how do we explain that? And so that's the basic, I don't want to go on too long here before William gets in, but that's the basic idea. We're saying we're bringing forth evidence that if you don't understand it, don't take it into account, you'll just have to leave all kinds of World War II events to the side and say, I can't explain this. So one correction, you know, Google changed to YouTube, and for a while there was a transition, but a lot of the people got their stuff back up. So The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler is actually on YouTube for free, all 2 hours and 22 minutes, and it's also there in parts. from several people. I didn't put any of it up, but I'm glad they put it up. Our website, which is HitlerDVD.com, because that's easy to remember, that sells the video and a three-hour audio I did with Christopher John Bjerknes on the video, and that sells it for $29 for the DVD if people want a hard copy, okay? And we give permission to the people that buy it to make as many copies as they want. So while we don't mind taking in a few dollars to help keep going here, we give them immediately the power to reproduce the video, the DVD or the CD and spread it out, because we're mainly about spreading the word on these things. And I say at the end of the DVD and in the audio, that the audio CD, that I wanted to get all these sources on the record so that if some younger researcher or some researcher beat me to the punch on getting it into the book form, then that's fine. And also, we did say people could look at this evidence and they may have a different interpretation, and we may have to back off of something we've said at some point. I left that possibility open because there's, you know, you always might learn new information that slightly changes the complexion of what you thought it was. So, Mike, I guess that's a good intro, and you know, and now I can yield the floor to William.
All right, and Bill, you have the website mk.christiania.org, which is in stark contrast to what you present Adolf Hitler to be. If you could start off with your general beliefs of what he stood for and kind of rebuke some of the things that's already been up at this point.
Just one second. This is Jim again. Could somebody spell that website? Because every time you're saying the website, it's like the phone is glitzing it over a little bit.
Yeah, Bill, if you could spell it out for people, that'd be great.
Well, basically, I haven't seen Jim Convent's DVD, and I probably won't. I read over his Nazi Zionist Connection website, The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler. And first, I have a serious problem with Mr. Condit's basic thinking and his basic premise. You know, Adolf Hitler dealt with the Zionists, there's no doubt about it, and we could talk about why he did that. But Mr. Condit seems to get all of his allegations about Adolf Hitler from Jewish sources. If Adolf Hitler dealt with the Zionists, and that makes him a Rothschild agent, what is Mr. Condit? That's what I'd like to know. As for the charges on Mr. Condit's website, Adolf Eichmann was a Jew. Adolf Hitler paid off his half nephew William to keep him silent about his family lineage. IBM and the Holocaust. IBM and the Holocaust, you have issued statements supporting this story, and Edwin Black, the Jew that wrote the book and concocted this story, released this book the same exact day a class action suit by the Jews was filed against IBM. This is show of business. It is not history. That this you have taken all of the accusations by the Jews against Hitler, and you have encapsulated them into a slander against Hitler.
Okay.
As for Dunkirk, if you want to talk about Dunkirk, first, Adolf Hitler himself did not issue the order at Dunkirk to cease and desist, to stop the advance. Okay?
Well,
Adolf Hitler
didn't
issue that order.
Who did?
Well, General Gerd von Rundstedt issued that order. Adolf Hitler approved the order, I think, one or two days later. But Gerd von Rundstedt had already issued that order. He was the battle commander. He was in charge. Adolf Hitler wasn't at the front, right?
Yeah, but
this
but,
is very common knowledge.
But
and
why
now,
did Hitler approve it?
Why did Hitler approve it? Because Hitler had a policy of appeasement towards England. Chamberlain was still the prime minister at Dunkirk. And Chamberlain was very open to, he had a very conciliatory attitude towards Adolf Hitler in Germany. And he's been criticized for that rather heavily. Okay, so we have to take that into consideration. Adolf Hitler said over and over and over again that he wanted peace with England. He did not want war with England. He had hoped that Saxon blood would win out over Jewish printing presses. And of course, that didn't happen, but that was always Hitler's hope. And that was his hope right through Dunkirk. Dunkirk was basically an offering. Von Rundstedt himself was the one that pulled back the that this is common knowledge. Hitler sought peace with Britain, and the mercy granted at Dunkirk was a token of that peace. Von Rundstedt was agreeable to Hitler's policy towards Britain at the time. There's an excellent article on Dunkirk by Michael Walsh, The Legend of Dunkirk Debunked, which ran in the May-June 2001 Barnes Review. That is one good source the information I'm offering. Now, Hitler dropped, and his proof, the absolute historic proof that he still sought peace with England, and that was his reasons for his treatment of the British at Dunkirk, the absolute proof lies in his dropping of hundreds of thousands of pamphlets entitled A Last Appeal to Reason over Britain by air on July 19th, 1940, several weeks after Dunkirk. The British people, basically most of them, they were so heavily propagandized by Jewish propaganda against Germany that they basically laughed at Hitler's appeal to reason. That's the proof right there.
Wait a minute.
That's beyond dispute.
Well, all those things don't in any way disturb the problems with Hitler approving that order at Dunkirk. Did Hitler forget? Did he forget at that moment that he had given speeches that the Rothschilds and the international bankers controlled the United States and Great Britain?
Well, yes, but like I said, Hitler had always hoped that the blood of the people, the minds of the people would prevail for the bankers, and it didn't.
But wait a minute.
Hitler was naive in that respect. There's no doubt. That
So you're saying at that moment he forgot
I'm not saying he forgot. I just explained myself.
Okay, well, it doesn't make sense, because here's why it doesn't make sense. They had the British bottled up enough that if they had taken them, captured them without killing them, which they could do, and you can look at the actual diaries of the British leaders and the German leaders while Hitler was letting him go at Dunkirk, and I don't think we can pass it off on his second and third in command. He approved the order, so let's get off of this thing.
He approved the order. The order was already issued.
He reversed the order at Operation Barbarossa. He reversed the order there.
What order did he reverse at Barbarossa? Let's hear this one.
His generals were going in, and that was their thing, was to go in and to capture Moscow. And on the basis of Himmler, he reversed that policy right in the middle of the battlefield with the German generals screaming, "What are you doing?" And many of them just concluded Hitler was insane at that point.
I don't buy that version of history. The Army Group Center was basically surrounded, and Hitler ordered them to take a defensive position.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Let's go back to Dunkirk. We can get to Barbarossa. Let's go back to Dunkirk. He could have captured all the British without killing them, and then he could have said to the then he could have sent planes into Britain and put in, you know, got rid of the Churchill leadership and put in the British Patriot leadership, and then he could have dealt with the Rothschilds. To let the British go at that point indicates that he's in deals.
Yeah, well, first you're assuming that capturing 338,000 troops is tantamount to victory over England, right?
When
Hitler didn't have a fleet that could get him out of the Baltic Ocean, right?
Well, wait a minute.
That's what you're assuming.
I'm assuming, yes. So does everyone else I've ever heard that commented on that, said that capturing that amount of soldiers would have ended the war effectively with Britain at that point in a victory for the Germans.
That's an assumption. I think it would have strengthened England's resolve. It definitely would have strengthened the resolve of the Jews in the United States. It would have strengthened Roosevelt's resolve.
Roosevelt was already involved in the war.
The U.S. Navy was already fighting the war, right? I mean, surreptitiously, but they were already fighting.
Yeah, but there's no way you were going to make the Jews any more opposed to or committed to the course they're on than it is an absurd capitulation, which indicates Hitler still wanted to be a leader at the end of World War II, and he was trying to reestablish contact with the Cliveden Group and trying to somehow become a player when he realized they were inching him out. It was Stalin. The Rothschilds backed four super criminals: Churchill, Roosevelt, Stalin, reluctantly, and Hitler. And Hitler was the odd man out. He finally realized. For instance, when he and Stalin invaded Poland at the same time, the Western press condemned Hitler and didn't say a word about Stalin. So Hitler realized he was being inched out.
Well, none of this is anything new, right? I mean, but the Rothschilds did not back
Well, it's
Hitler
new to most people. It's new to everything in my DVD is new to most people. The fact
there's nothing new to me on your website.
Well, maybe not to you, but to the average person is shocked when they see my video. They're shocked, and they are, as some people have said, they're changed forever.
Well, that doesn't mean it's true.
Well, yeah, but the point is, you've said you won't watch my video. I can tell you that other people have brought my
video. I won't watch your video because I see the schlep you have on your website.
No.
Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Ehrenreich.
Look.
He's not talking. You think a Jew is telling the truth?
Yes, there's many Jews oppose. Many Jews have opposed the Zionist and the world Rothschild thing.
Whoa, slow down. I don't see a difference between a Zionist Jew and a Jew. We've had a Jewish problem for 2,000 years, long before the word Zionism was coined.
Well, I can.
Jews will run out of every country in Europe for 1,000 years before Palestine was recognized by Israel was recognized by the United
and
Nations.
And I'm aware of that, and I am completely – look, at any Jew that believes in the Talmud is a problem, Zionist or not.
No, any Jew – who is a liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ?
Okay, fine, but there's some Jews who accept Jesus as Christ. So, I mean, let's not be absurdly overgeneralizing here.
The Jews for Jesus, there can be no such thing as Jews for Jesus.
Well, there is the brothers.
They're not Jews for the Jesus of the Bible. They're Jews for some Jesus they've invented.
Well, I think that's true. But there is a father, Fathers Lieberman in the 18th century, the Jews that converted to be Catholic priests. There was also the.
The Catholic priest is basically Christianity for Jews. It always has been.
You mean the Catholic?
Since the Medici's.
The Catholic.
At least.
You're talking about the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Well, I totally disagree with you on that. And the only effective opposition.
You're going to disagree with me that Giovanni de Medici, they were a Jewish crime family that took over the papacy.
I don't believe that is the case.
The Borgias.
No, the Borgias have been smeared.
That's the case.
The Borgias have been smeared. But here's the point is that the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages was the most effective opponent of the Jews in taking over society. They quarantined them. St. Thomas.
Well, that's proven. That's true. That's true until about the 14th century.
No.
When the Catholic Church was basically infiltrated and taken over.
No. The takeover of the Vatican didn't happen until 1958, even though there was attempts and there was infiltrations. I agree with you there.
Well, you should go read about the De Medicis and Giovanni de Medici and Catherine de Medici.
In 1570, right around there, Pope Pius V said every Jew in Vatican City had the Vatican States had to wear a yellow star. So obviously they weren't in control at that point. The point here is that no, I don't agree with that at all. The Catholic Church, in fact, here is probably where we have a basic disagreement. The Jews were trying to figure out, the top Jews, how to take over and dominate Europe and the Catholic Church, and they finally came up with the strategies that they use in the 20th century. And Hitler actually was a parody.
You think it took them that long because the Jesuits were heavily infested by Jews and had been dominating Europe and the Catholic Church since the French Revolution and the birth of the Illuminati.
They were not working for Jewish interests. That's Jewish propaganda since 1958.
But the Jesuits were propagating banks all over the world. What do you mean they weren't working for Jewish
banks? Well, that doesn't mean they were Jewish banks. I mean, the point is I've all this evidence that people like Eric John Phelps have come up with. There's two final ways that the top Jews are trying to divert people from understanding what's happening: the reptilian theory pushed by David Icke, which is beyond absurd, and the Jesuits. Those are the two final ditches to divert people from who's really ruining the world right now. So, you know, if you look on the internet, anybody can look on the internet. 1890, the Jesuits wrote a The Jesuit Oregon Catholica Civita wrote an article against the Jews in 1890, said if we don't take citizenship away from the Jews, the 20th century is going to be a horrible time for humanity. And so that was a very well-written article, and it was, I guarantee it wasn't in Jewish interest. So, but the point is, you're not the first. I mean, I know, I'm just going to say the names. Somebody took my DVD to Mark Weber, who's a, you know, a great researcher and historian, a revisionist. He wouldn't watch it. He said, I won't watch it. Someone sent it to Ingrid Rimland, the wife of Ernst Zundel. She looked, said, I watched the first 20 minutes and I know what he was trying to do and I wouldn't watch it. But we present an avalanche of evidence that is difficult.
Yeah, from Jew after Jew after Jew. Your webpage just shocked me.
Well, wait a minute.
That's why it shocked me. I can't believe anybody bought all this slot. Jews.
It's more effective to quote the enemy on something than it is to quote someone who has.
It's more shoot to the only source to half of this garbage.
Wait a minute. Are you aware what von Papen wrote in his diary in 1954? Now, von Papen was Hitler's only Catholic advisor, only big, you know, top Catholic advisor, and he wrote his diaries in 1954. Are you aware of what he said in those diaries? Because this is one
I don't trust most of what came out of the 1950s. Most of
well, this is the same
material
thing.
Material that came out of the Nuremberg trials,
yeah.
And the 1950s.
Well, this
is garbage.
This is von Papen's diaries, and this is what I ran into with Carolyn Jaeger when I debated her on Deanna Spingola's program. Every source I brought up, they just said, no, not a source, not a source, false, not a source, not a source.
Well, they're not a source because after the war, when Hitler lost the war, Hitler's motives, there were 50 million different Jews that made up 50 million different stories.
No, not
that
one.
Had Adolf Hitler,
not
the
one.
The Holocaust, which never happened.
Not one. Not one Jew has in the 40s and 50s and 60s admitted to this Nazi Zionist connection. That was of later. I think these books by Edwin Black.
Well, because that's embarrassing to them because the Nazi Zionist connection
is embarrassing.
Nazi Germany. First, Nazi Germany had a plan to move all the Jews to Madagascar.
Well, then why didn't they do that? Why didn't they do that? Why didn't they do that?
Well, first, because they didn't really have control of Madagascar yet, and second, because the Jews were very unhappy with it. Hitler was not the beast that people make him out to be, and a lot of your premises relies on Hitler's being a beast.
No. They rely on Hitler being in deals with the Rothschilds, and that's what the facts point to, especially Dunkirk and him sending Hess over there. He's trying to make a deal. He's trying to make a deal to survive the war.
Adolf Hitler wanted the Jews out of Germany. He didn't care how that happened.
Well, that's the problem. That's
the
problem.
Wanted the Jews to move to Palestine.
Yeah, well, that's
it. It was a natural fit.
That set up World War III. That set up World War III.
Well, what do you mean that set up World War III? That doesn't have a damn thing to do with World War III.
Yeah, it does.
Do you think we have a Jewish problem because of that state in Palestine?
Yes, it exacerbated.
We had a Jewish problem. You just agree with me. We had a Jewish problem for 1,000 years before that state in Palestine, for 2,000 years.
Right, I agree with you. But
that's
exacerbated
since Garden Eden.
That exacerbated by 1,000%. Them putting them in the middle of the Arabs there and stealing the Arabs' land.
It doesn't exacerbate anything. The only thing that exacerbates the problem is that most Christians have their lips wrapped around Jewish anuses. That exacerbates the problem.
Well, that came second. That came from all this propaganda from Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Now, are you aware of the meeting?
Well, really it came from Cyrus Schofield and James Bullinger.
Well, that was the source of it, but it gained much traction after 48, and television, of course, helped the Jews gain a lot of things. Now,
well, who runs the television?
What?
Who runs the television?
Well, that's what I just said. Television has given them an avenue.
But that still doesn't make Hitler a Rothschild agent.
Wait, no,
but Hitler was a Rothschild agent are totally unfounded.
Well,
you know, Hitler
no, they're
coming
not.
Up.
Oh, my God.
His party.
Well,
they're totally unfounded.
No.
All
okay,
you have is conjecture, and this has to be so because that was so.
No,
that's all
not.
You have.
Wait,
you don't have one suspended documentary evidence. When Hitler came to power, he created his own money.
And
the
not
world
right
was
away.
In the depression. Germany was in debt slavery until the day Hitler came to power. When Hitler came to power, he started issuing his own treasury notes.
Not right away.
And as soon as he started to do that, the Jews declared war on Germany.
No, that
1933.
And that was a part phony thing, because it allowed the transfer agreement to take place, which funded the Jews ready to take over Palestine with tens of millions of dollars.
Well, you're making like all Jews are on the same page, and that's
well,
not
you,
true.
Well, you
either.
Kind of said that like they were a few minutes ago. No,
the Jews in Germany didn't want the Jews in New York to declare war on Germany. Right? The Jews in Germany pleaded with Samuel Untermeyer not to do it. It was the Jews in America that declared war on Germany. I'm sorry I didn't keep myself clear from the beginning. But not all Jews are on the same page.
Right. Mm-hmm.
World Jewry, they're not all playing for the same team.
Now, will you let me...
Most Jews did not understand that the Rothschilds had Trotsky and Lenin in their pockets.
Well, okay, that's possible. Let me give me 3 minutes to roll out the evidence that Hitler was funded by the Rothschilds and the Warburgs in 1929. Then you go ahead and refute it. Will you give me?
I don't have a problem with that in 1929.
Well, they gave him the equivalent.
But what he did with it in 1933 that matters. You know, Adolf, you've run for office. You have to play the system to run for office.
I don't play
you
the system.
You should know that.
I don't.
If you don't play the system, you're not getting anywhere.
Well. I'm not going to make a deal with the devil.
For president. Tell me you could run for president without taking bank loans.
You couldn't.
You
couldn't, but that's but I'm not going to make a deal with the devil to run for Congress or president.
Where
let me tell you something else. Let me tell you something.
Where did he make the deal?
Can I have 3 minutes to get these sources out, and then you can refute it? But I got to have it uninterrupted. I can't be interrupted every 12th word.
Go ahead.
All right. One, Douglas Reed is one of the most credible authors of the 20th century. He started out as a London Times reporter, and he saw, as he looked behind the curtain in his work, who was controlling it, and he wrote many fine books. One of the books that he's written that's not too well known is The Prisoner of Ottawa, where after World War II, he went up to Canada and interviewed a fellow named Otto Strasser. Otto Strasser was an opponent of Hitler in the 20s, to take control of the Nazi Party. What Otto Strasser said, and boy do I identify with this, he said, one morning in 1929, we looked up and Hitler had unlimited money, and he ran the rest of us out of Germany. He put out a death contract on Otto Strasser, but he got out. Now, Otto Strasser was probably part Jewish himself, quite frankly, as I believe Hitler was, but I'm not sure of that. But Strasser was so... It had so much integrity that the Allies prevented him from going back into Germany after World War II. That's why the book's called Prisoner of Ottawa. And he said that he looked up and Hitler had unlimited money. Now, there was a book published, and this is in Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. There was a book published called Hitler's Secret Backers from a Dutch house around 1932, somewhere around there, and it was quickly crushed out of existence. And this is what Van Papen's note is in his diaries in 1954. He said, at the time, it was said by those who saw it that they said Hitler got money from the Warburgs, the Rothschilds through the Warburgs in 1929, the equivalent of $32 million then, or probably $100 million now. And Van Papen said Hitler's secret backers, which was published under the pseudonym Sidney Warburg, which was not a real person, Hitler's secret backers was the best source on how the Nazis suddenly gained finances. Okay, and then also there's another source that's escaping me right now. It might come to me, but there's a third source. But I know what it is. It was in the full version of James Poole's Who Financed Hitler, where he talked about when the Nazis were running our office, they seemed to have unlimited money. Now, the idea that the economically racked Weimar Republic, where people were struggling for existence, and I know a lot of German businessmen did donate to Hitler because he sounded like he was restoring German pride and all that. with his speeches, but you still could not have little German businessmen adding up to that kind of money. And anyway, that so the point is that let me tell you this: Hitler, the Warburgs and the Rothschilds today are not going to fund me. They're not going to fund James Traficant. They're not going to fund Ron Paul. They wouldn't have funded Pat Buchanan. So the idea that they funded Hitler to that extent means they had some reason to believe he would play ball with them, or they wouldn't have unleashed him with that amount of money. You go ahead.
Well, that's all conjecture. That's all conjecture. I'm familiar with, I haven't read it, but I'm familiar with Hitler's secret backers. There's no documentary evidence to point to in the book.
How about von
Papen? It's all based on what what to me is obviously somebody's agenda, but it's not based on any. Where are the historical documents? Well, where is the there are standards that historians should keep that you don't meet because you're putting together these so-called conspiracy theories.
Well, wait a minute.
These sources that have agendas to discredit the Nazis and
Adolf Hitler. Otto Strasser had an agenda to discredit the Nazis when he was one himself?
I don't know Otto Strasser.
You need to watch my video and read the book so you have some basis to judge. Strasser.
No, I would like to see what originally Otto Strasser wrote if I'm going to evaluate Otto Strasser. I'm certainly not going to evaluate it from your book.
From Douglas Reed's book. Douglas Reed is one of the most respected historians of the 20th century for people that know what's going on. Do you think Douglas Reed would falsify spending months of his life up there with Otto Strasser, and he wrote another book with Strasser called Hitler?
Douglas Reed is just a man.
No, what I want to see is the documentary evidence. If Douglas Reed finds something and writes about it in a history book, he has to document.
No, he talked to Otto Strasser. He talked to him personally.
Okay.
Let's not minimize firsthand historical evidence. See, this is the type of...
Well, I don't consider that firsthand historical evidence.
Why? Talking to a live person, the other book they wrote is called Hitler and Me with Douglas Reed. That was Otto Strasser talking about Hitler and me. I've never seen that book. How can you discount an impeccable – Douglas Reed is an impeccable source. He's not some yahoo who just did one thing. He wrote – his books are respected by everybody that is serious about the 20th century. And you're saying in this book with Strasser he's going to make
stuff
up?
Well, that's nice because most people serious about the 20th century are just wrong, right? I mean, you admitted that yourself.
I meant most people like us that look behind the curtain.
Source.
I meant most people like us that look behind the curtain. I didn't mean the mainstream historians. I meant the people that have looked behind the curtain, like Douglas Reed did. That's why they're so appreciative of his work. He wrote it at a time, excuse me, we're very few people. We're writing the truth. But see, this is what I run into, and with I don't know
well, what. Well, Otto Strasser was a traitor. Why should I trust Otto Strasser?
How was he a traitor? How was he a traitor? He was a competitor of Hitler. He wasn't a traitor. He was a traitor that they wouldn't let him back in Nazi Germany and occupy Germany after the war, and they sent Roosevelt's ambassador to him and said, we'll let you back occupy Germany, and you'll have all the money you need, but you're going to have a controller in Moscow that'll tell you when you go out of bounds. And Strasser said no. Unlike Sean Hannity and unlike Rush Limbaugh, Strasser said no, and he spent the rest of his life in Canada, hence the prisoner of Ottawa. Why would you call him a traitor just because he was a competitor of Adolf Hitler? They were competitors to run the party.
They weren't competitors to run the party. Strasser was a communist.
He was a Nazi. He might have been a communist too, because communism and Nazism are very similar.
He might have been a Nazi in name only, but he was a communist.
Well, in Germany, he was working as a Nazi throughout the 20s, not a communist. And another thing he brings up in that book.
So explain 1933 and Adolf Hitler's the treasury notes that he issued and began to issue from that time forward.
Yeah, now
all the bankers that invested in Nazi. And let me explain why the bankers invested in Adolf Hitler.
Yeah,
right?
please.
Not all the bankers are on the same page. Don't assume that because they're international bankers that they're all playing the same game. Rothschild screwed an awfully large number of international bankers, of his fellow international bankers, at the French Revolution to gain the wealth of England. I mean, that's pretty common knowledge.
Well, I knew he
all the time.
I knew he defrauded the common people. I never heard that he defrauded other of his allied bankers, of Jewish bankers.
Oh no, Rothschild was disseminated propaganda that made them all sell so his agents could buy. Thinking that I'm aware of that.
I wasn't aware that
it wasn't the common people buying the stocks and bonds or selling the stocks and bonds. It was the other bankers selling the stocks and bonds.
Okay.
It was the other bankers selling off and the wealthy selling off, trying to cut their losses, thinking Napoleon won Waterloo, and Rothschild's agents were buying it all up.
I know that Rothschild's agent bought up. I thought he had defrauded basically the other English aristocracy, but if you say he got some of the other...
Well, I mean, yeah, but the other bankers also. It's that they needed brokers to sell their wares to.
Yeah.
That the basically, when Hitler was running for power, Trotsky and Lenin were in the Rothschilds' pockets, 100%.
Right.
There's no doubt.
Right.
They were directly funded by the Schiffs and the Rothschilds. That they were. Trotsky was run out of Russia by Stalin. Stalin was a loose cannon, okay?
He was
taking money from the bankers. He was getting their financing, but they didn't trust him.
And they didn't want him. They wanted Trotsky.
And Stalin was very bellicose. And Stalin really did want this, and he was serious about it, spread communism to the entire world.
Now, my information is exactly...
Now, the industry...
Let me interject. My information on Stalin was exactly the opposite, that the bankers wanted Trotsky, who was intermarried with them. Trotsky married one of the bankers' daughters, and he got real sick when Lenin was dying. Trotsky did. There's a movie, there's an HBO movie about Stalin, and I think it's called Lenin and Stalin, showing Lenin, and this is verified from other sources, taking Lenin to help him as a patient, but he really poisoned him to death. So Stalin beat Trotsky to the punch, and this is why the Trotskyites stayed around him until 1938 when he uncovered that all these Trotskyites were around him, then the show trials took place. But it was Trotsky who had the vision to spread communism worldwide right then. But after the Poles stopped the Russians in 1919 at the Vistula River, when they were trying to take over, the Jews were trying to take over Europe in 1919 because Europe was so exhausted from World War One, the Poles stopped them by a near miracle. And Stalin then said, I'm going to concentrate on Russia and consolidate communism here and not go international as fast. And that was the tension between the Trotskyites and the Stalinites. At least that's my information on it.
Well, Stalin had everything that I've read tells me that Stalin had every design to have a world collection of proletariats.
Eventually, but he was moving slow after that.
He had very bellicose language towards Europe, and he had planned to take all of Europe, which is why Barbarossa began.
Yeah.
Well, when Hitler was rising to power, Hitler was the only real politician with any following in Germany that stood up to the communists.
And by the way, the Rakovsky...
The bankers had every interest in protecting their property from the communists.
The Rakovsky interrogation, if you're familiar with that, says that in it, Rakovsky's explaining to Stalin's man Kuzmin that, some of the bankers were backing Hitler so he could destabilize Stalin so that they could bring Trotsky back to power. And by the way, when the show trials happened in 1938 and Stalin was on to what they were trying to do, remember he sent his agent and he finally put an ice pick through Trotsky's head in Mexico. Are you there?
Yeah, there's at least...
Sorry, I just disconnected.
There's at least two descendants of Leon Trotsky that are in prominent positions in U.S. politics today, right?
One of them is Axelrod.
Well, one of them is Nora Volkow, or whatever the hell her name is. She has something to do with the one of the drug administrations, one of the drug agencies, and the other one is William Crystal.
Oh, Crystal is a Trotsky descendant?
Yeah, that's from what I understand. Yeah.
Boy, that's a bombshell. Well, also Axelrod, who is Obama's political hander, is also, I know that he's a Trotsky descendant. But yeah, so Trotsky was in with the bankers, not just the Congress. All my only point was is that he says in there that Hitler was the only chance that they had in Germany. Hitler in Germany was the only chance they had to destabilize Stalin enough so that they could maybe have a switch of power there.
The Jews controlled Germany. They had full control of Germany under the Weimar Republic. They had a Jewish central bank. Germany was in the same debt slavery that the United States and every other Western nation was at the time to the Rothschilds.
Okay, I agree with
Adolf
that.
Adolf Hitler used the system to get into office.
Okay, now let me...
And he was the only German politician that was vociferous, that spoke against communism. And for that reason, the industrialists and the bankers wanting to protect their interests and not really understanding the amount to which the Rothschilds had influence in Russia, they were more than happy to invest in Adolf Hitler. When Adolf Hitler came to power, he eventually flipped the bankers off and started issuing his own treasury notes.
Well,
once he started issuing his own treasury notes and keeping a zero trade balance, Germany underwent a tremendous economic revival. I mean, this is pretty much
no question.
Public knowledge.
No question.
While the rest of the world remained in depression. If the Rothschilds, if Hitler was a Rothschild agent, there's no reason for the war.
Okay, wait a
Germany
minute.
Germany has a central bank.
Oh, yes,
and
it was.
They don't care how long he plays little tin soldier for.
Okay, let me respond to that. First of all, the goal of the entire First and Second World War was threefold. One was to knock all the monarchs off their thrones, from the Tsar of Russia to the Habsburgs, and they succeeded in that. Two was to establish the State of Israel. And three was to dominate the world, especially Europe. World War II, it turned out to be a depletion of the European gene pool, the white European gene pool. 70 million Europeans lie dead on the battlefield when it was over. Now, I would like to suggest to you this is what was happening, because as quite a few of different authors talk about, including Cherub, the Russian aristocrat, Cherub Spiridonovich, in the book The Hidden Hand, there was a centralization of power going on, and I forgot to mention one other goal of World War II was to take over the Vatican overtly and completely, which happened in 1958, which may be out of the, and I'm a Catholic. I'm saying that as a Catholic. The Vatican.
Well, they had that control. The Jews had control of the Vatican many times before 1958.
I don't agree.
You'll have to read up on it.
I don't agree. There was always a Catholic pope that was opposing whatever.
The De Medicis were a Jewish banking family, and that's when the Catholic Church, under Giovanni De Medici, the first De Medici pope, that's when usury became acceptable to the Catholic Church.
Well,
and it was all downhill from there.
Well, you're talking 6 centuries ago.
Yeah, right. That's when.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there might have been
pretty common knowledge.
But there was all,
the Fifth Lateran Council, right?
Yeah, that would have been many centuries ago. But there was always a Catholic pope that did not go along with what's happening since 58. But let me go further on this thing with Hitler rising to power. There's a book out. We got it in our DVD. The book is called, the pamphlet is called Hitler's Policy is a Jewish Policy, and I'm going to have to put that up. It was written by a Frenchman, Maison, and
that doesn't make Hitler a Rothschild agent. He wanted all the Jews out of Germany and Palestine.
No, wait, they go into much more of that, such as putting Talmudic laws on German soil. Hitler brought Talmudic laws to German soil. When he said that the Germans and the Jews couldn't intermarry, that was the Talmud. Now, but so they go into
not a Talmudic law; that's Bible.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Well, let's get clear what we are. I'm a Roman Catholic raised.
I'm a conservative Christian.
Are you a Christian identityist?
Yes. I'm a two-seed line Christian identity.
Okay,
I
well,
conservative Christianity.
Yeah, there's probably some grains of truth in that, but it's not the whole picture. It's not the
grains
whole
grains of truth? You want to debate the Bible with me?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. First of all, but that's a different debate, because the first question would be, how can you the whole basis of Protestantism, including Christian identityism, is total confusion. But this is another two-hour debate.
It's what do you think? The Catholic Church has ever been the Church of God? That's just crazy.
The Catholic Church. There wasn't even a Protestant. There wasn't even
a freaking opportunist politician.
There wasn't even a Protestant until 1517 when Luther started Protestantism.
There wasn't a Protestant until 1517.
Yeah.
Because they all had guns to their head.
Oh, baloney! Baloney! There wasn't a
Protestant until 1517 because you didn't go against the empire.
Yeah, because Luther said everybody interpret the Bible for yourself. Now we got 6 billion popes. Total confusion. The basis of byproduct, William.
Where does the Bible put a stamp of approval on a pope?
What?
The pope is the beast of revelation.
No.
Where does the Bible put a stamp of approval on a pope?
An anti-pope.
I read Greek, right? I have my own Bible translator. I could talk to you about Greek all day.
An anti-pope might be the beast of revelation. But
no, the pope is the antichrist.
Not
period.
A pope. No. Listen.
The pope and the Jews.
No, this, I don't, you know.
You're a papist. You worship the Pope.
Wait a second here. I think we're getting a little off topic.
Yeah, hey, I'd be glad to come back and debate this another time. And believe me.
You want to debate Catholic and Protestantism on another show.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do it another time, but it is getting off the subject.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Hitler, 1933. To me, as one of my supporters on the Internet said, Hitler, and again, leaving aside his frame of mind, because both Hitler and Stalin did, in my opinion, try to overthrow the bankers at points. Hitler and Stalin were much more substantial men than, let's
Hitler
say,
did overthrow the bankers. He ran them out, just like Andrew Jackson did.
No, let me respond to that. Let me respond. But Hitler and, Obama and Bush, W. Bush, are not substantial men. They're puppets. But Hitler and Stalin both tried to overthrow the bankers at different times. Stalin wasn't really defeated till 1989 when Stalin
took their money in every five-year plan. He took Jewish money. He took Rothschild money.
And they were trying to outmaneuvering, but they really didn't do it till 1989 and the so-called fall of communism. But the point is,
when communism fell, who ended up with all the wealth of Russia?
The Trotskyite Jews.
Thank you.
Okay, the Trotskyite defeated Stalin. One of my supporters called Hitler, leaving aside his frame of mind at every moment, Rothschild bait for Germany. The Germans were crushed for no reason whatsoever at Versailles. I believe that Douglas Reed said that it was like seeing all the representatives from all countries were Jews in pinstripe suits, and they made Germany impossible terms to repay money at the Versailles Treaty, even though Germany didn't really lose World War I. Okay, so the Germans were humiliated by the Weimar Republic through the 20s, while Hitler's rising and national socialism, which should be a big problem for people who say they're for the Constitution. National socialism is every bit as evil as international socialism. But
there's nothing evil about national socialism. So I don't think you understand national socialism.
Would you classify yourself as a neo-Nazi? I'm just asking.
No, don't confuse me with one of those little tattooed skinheads, right?
Oh, okay, all right. I'm just asking. But do you support national socialism?
I've heard your words before, right? You think that we're free under capitalism, right?
No, I don't. No, we were under. No,
if we had a choice between national socialism and freedom, I heard you make that statement.
No, I never said that exactly. But we're under vulture capitalism, which is almost the same as communism and national socialism. Now,
it is economic Talmudism, right? It is slavery.
Say that again.
You agree that it is slavery, right?
What, vulture capitalism?
Yes. It's nothing like the free enterprise of the founding fathers.
That's what we want to go back to, is the free enterprise of the founding, where it's a fair playing field. And let me tell you what Rosnowski said about this, and it's a good phrase. He said, it's like we're fighting a war with bullets, but the bankers are the only one who are allowed to manufacture the bullets. And, of course, we're talking about here dollars. We're fighting a war with dollars. They're the only ones allowed to print the dollars, and they're buying up the whole world. And they need to be thrown out and put in jail. right now. I mean, if we could arrest all of them, and the Goldman Sachs and the Fed, we should arrest them right now, put them on trial, put them in jail, and put an honest money issuing system, of course. But
isn't that what Hitler tried to do?
Well, let me go to 33. Let me talk about that for a minute. So Hitler then issues the money. And somebody, I understand that Rosenberg out of Russia is the one who told him how to do that, but I'm not, you know, I've heard that, some people have written that, I don't know if it's true. But they go ahead and they issue money, and they issued it correctly. No question about it. Hitler issued money so that the money was based on goods and services. When you combine that with the industry of the German people, and by the way, I'm only one-eighth German, I'm half Irish, one-fourth Italian, one-fourth Welsh or what's the other one up there, Scottish, we don't know which, and one-eighth German. So I don't really have a real dog in the – it isn't like I'm 100% German. But I recognize that without the Germanic peoples, I don't know what technology we would have. So when you combine the industry of the Germanic peoples with the with Hitler issuing money properly, that is where you had this meteoric rise of Germany, okay?
And the Hitler was a Rothschild agent idea doesn't go with that at all.
Well, yes, except for one thing. When you got into the war then, Hitler made so many moronic decisions, in my opinion, that it destroyed Germany.
What moronic decisions
well,
did
let me,
Hitler make?
Let me just finish the sentence. It destroyed Germany and has enslaved Germany to this day.
Why did Hitler launch Barbarossa?
He launched it to try to do a preemptive strike on Stalin, but then he stopped
because
it.
Because Stalin was about to launch an offensive against all of Western Europe.
Yeah.
Hitler basically threw himself on the pyre. He threw Germany on the pyre and sacrificed it for the benefit of all of Western Europe.
Didn't work, though. Let me ask you this question. If
it didn't work, in 1947, we would have had a USS Ireland. We'd have had a Union of Soviet Socialist Ireland and Iceland too, probably.
Well, I mean that's a big leap there. But
not a big leap at all. Stalin had dozens of divisions amassed on Germany's border, and they were building airports all up and down the border with Germany. And Hitler saw all that and said, "I've got to do something about this, and my only weapon is the element of surprise."
Okay, so then why?
On July 22nd, 1941, he launched Barbarossa, a surprise attack on Russia, and Russia couldn't deal with it. But Hitler's generals never followed. After the initial attack, Hitler's generals never followed Hitler's strategy. Several of them were just playing. Yeah, Hitler's generals never followed
Hitler's
strategy.
No, they were screaming.
In Barbarossa.
They were screaming to let us go on to Moscow, and Hitler said, "I have to follow my field."
Whoa. No, he didn't want Moscow. Hitler's strategy was never tried, period, in the Eastern theater of operations. Hitler wanted to take the oil fields of the Balkans first.
When they were in view of Moscow, why didn't he let them go and take it?
When they were in view of Moscow, they were already about done, and they were surrounded, and Hitler told them to move. Hitler's order was for them to go into a defensive position. But they should have never been in Moscow if they'd have actually followed Hitler's strategy in the first place.
I don't know how. So how did they get so far afield from his strategy if he was issuing the order?
How did they get so far? There's an excellent Barnes Review article on this, and the next time you talk for a couple of minutes, maybe I'll come up with the title and the
I mean, I have a lot of respect for Willis Carter and Mike Piper and all of the crowd, but I'm not sure. All those Barnes Review, in other words, you, Carolyn Yeager, Barnes Review, the predetermined conclusion is Hitler is a demigod and everybody else was goofing up. But our evidence on the DVD punctures that. 99% of the people who watch it.
And Hitler's strategy was laid out, and von Brauchitz and Franz Halder consistently resisted his strategy. They wanted to go for Moscow, and Hitler didn't want to do that. Hitler's strategy was to take St. Petersburg and to take the Balkan oil fields. And finally, they allowed Guderian to go to the Balkan oil fields, and he was supposed to have three panzer divisions, and Halder would only give him two. He held back on him, and there were all kinds of resistance, especially with Senator von Bock and von Brosius and Franz Halder, who were basically traitors, and to Hitler's
I don't see
strategy
how.
To
you mean these German generals were traitors for what reason? For what reason were they traitors?
Well, you know, if Hitler was Stalin, their heads would have rolled, right? They were traitors because they constantly filed false reports and because they wouldn't follow Hitler's orders and they wouldn't follow his strategy. They had their own strategy and they followed their own strategy.
Well, you're deeper into this than I've studied. I just find it preposterous that every time something goes wrong, it's because somebody disobeyed Hitler and he doesn't do anything about it. Now let me ask you this.
Wasn't the tyrant that Stalin was. Stalin would have had a purge and relied on majors and captains.
Well, Hitler wasn't above purges. He on the night of the Long Knives, he murdered his 11 close one of 11 of his close associates. He wasn't above purges.
Well, right, and they were all homosexuals that were plotting a coup against him.
All right, let me try to continue on Hitler here. I say that when he got going with his, first of all, a two-front strategy was ridiculous when he could have captured the British and neutralized them.
He had to fight the two fronts. He had no choice. The USSR and Suvorov, Viktor Suvorov has proven this, but not only Suvorov, you know, I don't give Nuremberg any credibility
at
all.
Neither do I. I don't give it any either.
If you read the Nuremberg transcripts, you will find that both Göring and Jodl admitted that Hitler's assault on Russia was strictly defensive for the element of surprise because Russia was about to invade.
I went out. You just said you don't rely on. You just said you don't rely on Nuremberg, then you quoted Nuremberg.
Well, right, and I told you I quoted Nuremberg because you like to rely on Nuremberg.
No, I don't like to rely on Nuremberg. When have I
– Hans Frank.
Wasn't Nuremberg. He was hung at Nuremberg.
He was hung in Nuremberg. He was supposedly writing these letters from Nuremberg. All this comes from one book printed in Warsaw. I've seen no other copy of it. I've seen no other verification of the claims about Hitler's lineage that
but the Jews have suppressed.
They tried to make from Hans.
They haven't promoted Hans Frank's book, Frank's book. They've suppressed it. But let's go back to a key moment where Hitler does something that again indicates, like Dunkirk, I would say like Barbarossa, and this is a third thing Hitler does that's unexplainable and plays into the hands of the bankers. Roosevelt cuts off, progressively cuts off all the natural resources to Japan. And they're getting so little natural resources coming through Japan. Japan finally decides to retaliate against the American fleet.
Roosevelt was the real Zionist agent, right?
Yeah, he was a Zionist agent, yeah. So he's cutting off all their supplies. Japan, out of desperation, bombs our fleet, okay? Roosevelt now has an excuse to go to war with Japan because the American people don't want what he did. So he goes on and says, we're declaring our day of infamy and all that. 2 days later, unexplainably, Hitler declares war on the United States. Had Hitler not declared war on the United States right then, Roosevelt could never have convinced the American people to send 90% of our troops and 90% of our munitions to Europe. But once Hitler declared war on us because we attacked Japan, because Japan attacked us, then, and we declared war on Japan, then Roosevelt had an excuse to do so. And the apologies I've heard for this is, Hitler was a man of such honor that he had to stand by his Japanese allies. Well, the Japanese never declared war on Russia. And for Hitler to do that, it played totally into the hands of the bankers so we could send our troops. How would Roosevelt have explained to the American people why we're sending 90% of our troops and munitions to Europe if Hitler hadn't declared war on us?
Hitler declared war because it was inevitable.
Well,
Hitler declared war because Roosevelt was already fighting.
Yeah, but
war
very, very little. We didn't have. What, answer the
very
question.
Very little. Roosevelt was biting at the bit, and Hitler knew it.
Yeah, but answer the question. Why did Hitler declare war? Because Roosevelt could never have convinced the American people on the basis of Pearl Harbor to go to war to Europe. Why did he do it? You're saying that excuse that it was inevitable, okay, but don't give him an excuse right that second. It would take months.
Roosevelt had already been fighting a naval war.
Americans didn't know that. American people did not know that. So they would have no reason to go to war against Europe until Hitler as if he was called by Nathan Rothschild and told to do so, declared war on the United States right away.
Hitler declared war, and I have the Reichstag speech here, December 11th, 1941. I don't want to comment on the reasons why Hitler declared war because I haven't listened to the speech in a while.
Well, it doesn't matter what his stated reasons are. It doesn't make sense, just like Dunkirk doesn't make sense.
The United States Navy was attacking German naval vessels for years up until that point.
They were
already de facto at war. There are no reasons for giving this to that why Hitler...
American people didn't know that.
Declared war against the United States are unfounded. They are founded in truth that the United States was already de facto at war.
Well, then why didn't he declare war?
And he helped his Japanese allies as a method to assist them in their struggle against the United States.
Well, why didn't he declare war on America a year earlier then if that was the reason he declared war, that we were in war with them? Why did he wait till Pearl Harbor?
He wanted to stave it off as long as possible.
No, he didn't, because he did not want to stave it off because he declared war on the United States.
He absolutely wanted to stave it off as long as possible. Adolf Hitler explains all of that in his speech in his war declaration.
There's no. Well, what does he say? I'm dying to hear what he said.
He explains his full reason for declaring the United States on a war in his speech. I don't have it in my head.
Well, the point is, it doesn't matter what he said.
Why don't you listen to Hitler's reason to go war before you saying he's a Rothschild agent?
Because I know that whatever he says doesn't make sense. It only gave the United States an excuse to attack.
Whatever he says doesn't make sense because it only makes sense if it agrees with your Hitler as a Rothschild.
You're not even.
Absolute half-brain.
When we have a break, get the speech out and read it. Give me one reason he gives. If he hadn't declared war, Roosevelt couldn't have sent 90% of our men and munitions to Europe. He could not have done it, and he would have taken months or years to concoct a reason.
Hold it. Let's straighten something out real quick, right? Roosevelt's real war declaration came with the Lend-Lease Act in March of 1941, all right?
Why didn't Hitler declare war then?
No, Hitler didn't declare war then because Hitler was trying not to go to war.
Well, then why did he declare war 4 days after Pearl Harbor?
Slow down. If you understand what neutrality is in the war, okay, if you really want to understand that, and you go read the Lend-Lease Act, in March of 1941 is a declaration of war because it violates all of the neutrality that a neutral nation is expected to uphold.
Well, I'll accept that 100%.
It's a total violation of neutrality. And the Lend-Lease Act, even mainstream historians who love to quote, the mainstream historians admit that the Lend-Lease Act was a de facto war declaration, but Hitler still didn't go to war against the United States.
I accept that the Lend-Lease Act was a 100% declaration of war. Why didn't Hitler declare it then? You say because he's putting it off. Then why did he declare it 4 days after Pearl Harbor?
He had no choice.
He did have a choice. Roosevelt had no way to convince the American people, we got bombed by Japan, let's go to Europe. That he had no way to do that till Hitler obliged.
This is your conjecture, right?
It's better than the documents. It's circumstantial historical evidence like Dunkirk that doesn't make sense.
Well, it does make sense if you know the story. Now, perhaps Hitler's idea was that if he declared war against the United States to help Japan out, maybe Japan would declare war on the Soviet Union to help Germany out.
Well, they didn't.
No, but they were giving alluding to the possibility that they might. And if he did that to help them, and I'm sure that would have given them a lot of incentive, or at least Hitler hoped, to help them out against the Soviet Union.
And then there's the other indication you're just reminding me of that bespeaks Hitler having a Jewish influence rather than a straight German influence. He treated the Slavs horribly, and yet he called the Japanese.
Oh, that's Jewish propaganda.
The Poles testified that the Nazis were just as
and
vicious.
Who took over Poland after World War II?
No, this is people. Dana Alvey's still alive. She was there. She's in Los Angeles. She was there. She's a Catholic patriot and Pole. She says the Nazis were decapitating the leadership on the east side of Poland while the Russians were doing it on the west side of Poland. It was like fighting the same force, is what she said.
Right. There were Slavs in the Waffen-SS. And not only that, but, you know, the Poles had killed about 60,000 German nationals in 1938-39, right?
I've never heard that.
Yes, they
killed
about,
the Brandenburg
Massacre. That's why Hitler launched his invasion against Poland, because the Poles were severely mistreating Germans.
I mean, what do you mean they were pulling them out of their homes? There was a war. How were they killing 60,000?
The Poles killed approximately 60,000 Germans. There's documentary evidence of it.
What was the method?
In,
I mean,
in the area of Danzig.
Were they surprised? Were they surprise attacking him? I mean, I'm just saying, what is your saying they did? How did they kill 60,000?
Well, one little girl was nailed to a side of a barn door. How about that?
That sounds like German propaganda. That sounds like war propaganda.
Yeah, now to have a British propaganda, or should I say Jewish British propaganda, about tossing up babies and landing them on bayonets.
That was propaganda.
Which the Jews actually did, by the way, in the Bolshevik Russia.
I believe that because they were doing it against Christian babies. But yeah, that was propaganda against Germany. No question about it. Now. The question, though, is, but didn't Hitler also call the Japanese honorary Aryans?
I never saw that. And in fact, Hitler, I've read Mein Kampf, and Adolf Hitler understood that race was nationality. And he understood that to a great degree, that a Negro or a Chinaman could never be a German.
Okay, well.
Now, he had respect for Japanese industry and for Japanese culture, but that only again goes to show that he's not the beast that the Jews make him out to be.
Well, our DVD, I say numerous times, the idea that Hitler was trying to kill every Jew in the world is preposterous when you know that. We have in the DVD Hitler's Jewish soldiers.
Hitler wasn't trying to kill any of them. He's trying to send them to Palestine.
Well, I think that I don't agree. I agree there were no gas chambers. Anybody that looks into it has to say that.
That's the biggest Jewish lie in history, and yet you believe everything else they say.
I don't believe everything else they say, William. What we've done, and since you haven't watched the video, it's kind of hard for you to make these blanks. We pull out little facts from books that are glossed over or that they give no meaning for. And when you put all those facts together, you have two things. You have what you've already agreed to. You have irrefutable evidence beyond a reason. Before a jury, it would be beyond a reasonable doubt of the Nazi-Zionist collaboration and connection, which is a stunning shock to the average American. They are stunned, and that's why 99% of the people that view my video change their view, because they realize that a whole body of information has been kept from. And then you have what you would call before a jury the preponderance of the evidence. The preponderance of the evidence is that Adolf Hitler was part Jewish. It's not proven because he went to great lengths.
That's straight garbage, right?
No, it is not.
It is not.
It is the preponderance. They will admit
it.
It
can't be proven at all. The Jews, and there is no evidence.
The Jews will admit it eventually, like they just put on Lenin's tomb that he was one-fourth Jewish, which they
No, that's straight garbage. There's absolutely not one shred of evidence that Adolf Hitler was part Jewish.
Listen,
Captain Ramsey admitted in his book that there's no evidence that Hitler was Jewish.
Well, what year did that book come out?
Oh, early 50s.
There's no proof beyond reasonable doubt that Hitler and the Jews have gone to great lengths to destroy the evidence. And, for instance, the Austrian government, are you too aware that Dollfuss, the Catholic leader of Austria, Hitler came out of nowhere like Obama, okay? He's a shooting star like Obama.
It took him years to develop the NSDAP.
Hitler didn't come out of nowhere. How many years was the Beer Hall Putsch before 1933? Hitler was in prison 10 years before
he was not known to the world. He was not known to the world. And he suddenly burst upon the world, basically, in 1933. He was not well known until that point. And that is
an... The Nazi Party was growing throughout the 1920s. How can you possibly say that?
In Germany, but he was not known to the world. He was not headed...
He wasn't known to the world. He didn't care about the world. He cared about his own country.
What?
He wasn't running for office in the UN? What the hell are you talking about? He wasn't known from the world. Who gives a damn about the world? He only cared about Germany. He's
wait. I'm just saying.
Well, what's your shit? He wasn't known about the world.
When he came out.
Murphy translated Mein Kampf. This is common knowledge. James Murphy translated Mein Kampf 1938, a year before the war started.
Well, my point is this, though. When he became chancellor.
There's no agenda there, right, if the outcome of the war wasn't known, right?
Wait a minute. When he became known in 1933, okay, hundreds of small journalists in Germany, and this is in our video, and the Austrian government said, who is this guy? Where'd he come from? He's screaming anti-Semitism. Fine. Many agreed with him. Some didn't. But where'd he come from? The Austrian government did an investigation, and the government has a lot of resources. And what they concluded was that his grandmother, Schnickelgruber, in Europe, you had to sign in where you worked, and you still in Italy and other countries today, if you're staying at a hotel, they have every person sign in still. It's not like the United States. Every person is there. My kids were there. We were there in Italy, 1997. My six kids and wife and I, we had to sign in all of us every night. And you had to sign in where you worked. And they said that they found that Schnickelgruber was at the Rothschild mansion in Vienna when she got pregnant with Hitler's dad. Now, that was the Austrian government report. That is not hearsay from Joe Bum on the street who's a wino. That is a serious report. So
I don't trust anything that comes out of a government these days.
Right. That is what...
That was an Austrian government report published when? How the hell would that...
1934.
Well, why would they care? How did they know that?
1934, because they did the investigation. They sent investigators into all Hitler's that they could find out about him. And
Dollfuss,
the head of Austria, Dollfuss, who was assassinated by the Nazis in 1935.
How come I haven't seen this report? Where is this report that I could see it?
Well, I don't know that you can see it now because the Nazis, when they assassinated...
Because it's a figment of the imagination.
It is not a figment of the imagination. It was a...
Well, then how come you don't have it on your website? You don't have it on a first
because when Dollfuss was...
On your website, you have a secure reference...
Because when Dollfuss was assassinated, they got all the papers. The Nazis...
The only thing that's questionable about Hitler's lineage was his great-grandfather. And that was it.
His grandfather.
Today who don't even know their father. So what?
His grandfather.
Okay, his grandfather.
Well, and also Hitler's grandmother got all kinds of alimony or child support for 14 years, letters, and so back and forth. And so anyway, but the point is that the Austrian report is in the book, the Last of the Hitlers. It's in the book by Jetzinger called Hitler's Youth, and that was not Hitler's Youth Troops, but the Youth of Hitler.
Who wrote the Last of the Hitlers?
That was William Gardner. So that's a book that's out there. I mean, the point is, though, this Austrian report was talked about in the 1930s. It wasn't made up by me in 1999. So the point is that...
Yeah, here we go again. David Gardner, he goes back again to William Patrick Hitler.
Yeah.
They always go back to this William Patrick Hitler.
That's because he was
Adolf
the only
Hitler.
Guy that blackmailed Hitler.
No. Adolf Hitler shunned William Patrick Hitler. He never blackmailed Hitler. That's all revisionist bullshit. Okay? Greg Hallett, in 2005, he tried to write a book, Hitler was a British agent. And he was alleging that Hitler was an agent working for the British government. And he used the story from this Bridget Dowling, who allegedly was at one time Adolf Hitler's, you know, half-sister-in-law, so his brother Alois, the wife of Alois Hitler. And Bridget Dowling was the mother of William Patrick Hitler. Bridget Dowling claimed that Adolf had come to live in Liverpool from 1912 to 1913. That was her claim. This is William Patrick Hitler's mother. And this is from Greg Hallett's book. And Bridget Dowling claimed that Hitler stayed with her and her husband. However, she never made a claim that Adolf became a British agent during this time. Rather, all of her claims concerning Hitler are comparatively innocuous. It is only this Greg Hallett clown who extends this claim of Bridget Dowling's into some supposed circumstance into his own pet theory that Hitler was a British agent.
Well, obviously, Hitler is the British agent, I thought, might have been written to deflect from our DVD. It's such an absurd title.
Well, it's a 2005 book, right?
Well,
there's,
Well, we released this DVD in 2003.
Richard Dowling has been totally discredited. And William Patrick Hitler, all of these stories that came out of Bridget Dowling and William Patrick Hitler are pure bullshit.
I would have to go back on that one point. But this is the.
It's very obvious that these people were trying to capitalize on their relationship to Hitler. Bridget Dowling's own daughter said that her book was quackery and she just made it up. Her own daughter said that.
Well, are you denying that William Patrick Hitler went to Germany and worked in Germany during the Hitler reign?
I can doubt that, but Adolf Hitler was never in England in 1912 and 13.
I didn't say he did. I just said I believe the book Hitler was a British agent is a false propaganda to confuse the issue. The title's absurd.
Well, you have a claim with absolutely no documentary evidence.
No,
zero.
I quote the books in the DVD. There's numerous books that are not favorable to that are trying to debunk the idea that Hitler was Jewish that talk about this and try to debunk it. They don't promote it except for William Gardner. They bring it up and try to debunk it. Now, why are they bringing it up if it isn't something serious that needs to be dealt with?
And these are Jews that debunk it. If Hitler was a Jewish agent, if he was Jewish or an agent of theirs, then he would not have opposed a central bank in Germany. He did oppose it.
Let me address that. He pointed the finger around the world.
That's the reason why he was not a Jew.
No, it could not possibly have been if he did that. No, let me address that because I never did get done that point. Germany's been humiliated for 14 years or 16 years or 15 years. Hitler comes to power. The only way to reinvigorate Germany so they could fight the Second World War was to do honest money issue. So whether Hitler did that out of a desire to defeat the international bankers or to play ball with them by getting Germany raised up so they could then be smashed in World War II, I'm not sure. And I think Hitler.
Why do you think the Second World War was inevitable in 1933? The only reason why the Second World War was inevitable was because Adolf Hitler stood up to the bankers.
No.
Because he stood up to the communists.
The bankers.
That's the only thing that made the war inevitable. The war was not inevitable until Adolf Hitler stood up to the bankers.
No, the bankers were going to have a war no matter what. They wanted to deplete European gene pool.
If Germany rolls over and licks their nuts, that they're not going to war.
I don't believe that at all. They were determined on World War II like they were on World War
I. The Jews controlled Germany during the Weimar years. You admitted that.
Yeah, of course. Everybody knows that.
Why did we never culminate the Cold War? Why did we never have a war with Russia?
You want me to go into that?
I'll tell you why, okay? Because in the sexual revolution, when the Jews took over the country and women's lib in the 60s and 70s, the Jews won.
Well, I would agree with you on that. And when the so-called Berlin Wall fell, the biggest thing that went across into Russia was pornography because they were doing the Western model to corrupt a country. They figured that they're...
Well, of course, they were doing that to Germany in the 1920s, and they did it to America in the 1920s. They were corrupting our women in the 1920s, the roaring 20s. The only thing that stopped them was when they invented the Depression, our people found God again.
Here's the point. They were going to have.
There's a book on my site, Dr. Kurt Wiebe, Germany and the Jewish Problem. I did a series of podcasts on it, and everything that the Jews did here in the 60s and 70s, they were trying to do in Germany in the 1910s and 20s.
Well, yeah, but see, what you're missing the point that Hitler.
Hitler stopped all that.
It's okay.
He stopped all of that.
And so did when Stalin was in charge, there was no pornography there either in the 30s and 40s and 50s. You were searched for pornography when you went into the Soviet Union. Did you know that? I had a priest who gave a speech who said, I was shocked. He was kind of making a joke, but he was shocked that they were searching me for pornography. And he said, I tried to look as innocent as I could.
Because, Mr. Khan, I can answer that real easy. Because the government controlled everything. If the government itself was allowing pornography, that wouldn't make it corrupt. And very obvious to people. Obviously, they're a communist government. It's not going to promote pornography.
Well, I don't understand that completely because the Jews are using it to win.
The communists actually had – the Jews used pornography to weaken the fabric of nations,
right,
to separate wives from their husbands and sisters from their brothers and daughters from their fathers.
Yep.
They used pornography as a tool. They did it here in the 50s and 60s, and it was very successful in the 70s. It's part of the Jewish communist manifesto.
It's 100 times worse than ever now with the Internet.
Have you ever read Mein Kampf?
I have read parts of it. I have not read the whole thing. But
well, I've read all of Hitler's Mein Kampf, the Murphy translation. The Mannheim translation is straight garbage. And Adolf Hitler, and it resonates through Mein Kampf, was a good Christian man who stood against pornography, who stood for freedom. You don't understand fascism. I'll tell you that right now. You have no comprehension of what fascism is, and you should study it, because I think I do. Fascism was a reaction to, in Europe in the 19-teens and 20s, fascism was a reaction to the oppression of debt slavery under Jewish capitalism.
Well,
and it's
slavery, Jewish capitalism that has taken the wealth and technology of the United States and transferred it freely to China and the Pacific Rim nations. And
well, I don't
a
disagree.
System that would not have been possible.
I don't disagree with every implication of what you just said there. What I'm saying though is, let's go back to 1933. You surely have heard of the concept of false opposition. And all I'm saying to you is that our evidence convinces most people that Hitler, while he went back and forth, in his mind maybe, ultimately played the role of false opposition and bowed at the end when he was outmaneuvered, escaped from Germany, his body was never found. And that was when I'm 58 years old, 1967.
Well, that's conjecture too, but that's
it's not, not. Well, no, let me tell you why it's not. Let me tell you why it's not.
David Irving interviewed the man who was given the order by Hitler himself to destroy his own body, and he told him how he did it. Make sure nothing remains.
Well.
You know, if 6 million Jewish Holocaust victims can disappear in Germany, I'm sure Adolf Hitler's body can disappear.
But let me address that. But that is David Irving interviewed a person about 1989 when the archives were released from Russia. And what I think is a flaw in Irving's method is that everything in the archives has to be true. It doesn't. And every witness that he interviews doesn't have to be
true. Except the archives you research, right?
Please?
Except your archives.
Well, I'm not dealing with archives. I'm dealing again with public evidence.
Well, you're dealing with a lot of testimony from Jews. I'm going to keep bringing that up because it's all over your website.
Right, but it is not what they're pushing. It is facts they push that are facts they admit that are against their thesis. And when you put all those individual facts together from hundreds of sources, a new picture emerges. But the Jews are trying to debunk that Hitler was a Jew.
That's facts. IBM and the Nazis, is that fact?
IBM helped Hitler catalog the Jews in Germany. You're denying that? Thomas Watson got a lot of awards from the Nazi government, IBM.
Well, that's nice. He may have sold the Nazis some computers, but, you know, what's wrong with that?
No, but they showed him how to use their punch card system to catalog the Jews. They got awards from Hitler.
Well, so that's the only thing they used that for was to catalog the Jews?
Well, I don't know, but that's the important
thing.
They didn't
use
the important
thing.
General
German industry?
They
didn't use the computer technology in general German industry? Did the war revolve around the Jews? The war wasn't fought for the Jews. The war was fought because the Jews wanted to destroy Germany because Germany
and Europe
was... Because Germany stood up as a Christian nation that wouldn't take a Jewish central bank.
He needed to issue money properly in any case for Germany to rise. But then,
No. You don't get this. The Jews engineered the economy. If Germany had a central bank, they could have easily engineered a way for Germany to rise and still be in debt to the Jews, right? Don't hit me with that conjecture again.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if at the end of the war Germany...
You're telling me Germany couldn't have had a recovery if they didn't have a Rothschild bank.
No, I said they could have, because they did with Hitler issuing money. But if the plan was at the end to have Germany prostrate and enslaved, which it is to this minute, then
no, the
they don't care what happens between 1933 and 1939.
The Jews had Germany prostrate and enslaved, and Adolf Hitler broke those shackles.
Yeah, but that set up
and
that set up 70 million dead, communism taking over eastern side of Europe.
Well, who wants to see that?
Well, I think the Rothschilds could.
Who would foresee that the Jews had that much control over the United States and Britain for that to happen?
Well,
and maintain that control.
But that is all. But again,
Adolf Hitler gave speech after speech in 1936 through 1940 about the Jews plunging the world into world war. Adolf warned.
He realized by then he was a odd man out, and he was trying to stop the war at that point because he wanted to survive as a leader.
He
wanted to survive as a leader after this the period that was then going on, but he didn't succeed.
Well, that doesn't add up with his being a Rothschild agent either.
Well, he didn't. He wasn't going. He was trying to say to them, kind of like Michael Savage does today on radio, "I can run this better than you're running it if you'll just listen to me." I do believe that was happening. All we're saying is what we're bringing out fills in all the pieces. It fills in that there were deals.
It doesn't fill in any pieces.
Well, I say that
because it's totally against the truth.
All right, I can only urge
you
people listening to this. It's not conjecture. It's little facts put together. I have to urge everybody because we're not getting.
Adolf Eichmann is a Jew because he knew Yiddish. That's not conjecture.
That is what numerous people say,
Do you know what Yiddish is?
He looks Jewish.
Do you know what Yiddish is?
It's a combination of Hebrew and Khazar or something. But
no, Yiddish is basically German, right? You should probably look it up.
Well,
Yiddish is German.
It's a combination
of Hebrew and Slavic words, right?
It's a combination of Hebrew and German and probably some of the Khazar languages.
Yiddish is very, very close to German, and it has some Hebrew and
Slavic,
and Slavic,
which is the Khazars.
Okay. But it's basically German. And if you know, if you can understand a Negro in the ghetto, does that mean that you're a Negro?
No, but Eichmann looks Jewish.
If you understand
Eichmann
Spanish, I took Spanish in school for 2 years. Does that mean I'm a Puerto Rican?
Of course not, but Eichmann looks 100% Jewish. He speaks.
Eichmann doesn't look Jewish.
He sure
does.
And
there you go again.
And now, why did they have Eichmann in the soundproof booth?
Eichmann's a Jew because he speaks German and Yiddish is German, basically.
Yeah, why did Eichmann, and also, Eichmann helped the Ergen.
You know, bullshit like that, Jim, tells me how you arrive at conclusions.
No. The point is.
Good, it fits your theory,
no,
so you're going to jump.
All you do is say everything that is
brought
up.
And you're going to slander the man because he might look Jewish. He doesn't look Jewish.
He sure does. Now,
I grew up in Jersey City. I know what a damn Jew looks like.
All right, well, you're not the only one. And sometimes you can mistake it, especially if they're Italian or Arab. But here's the point. Here's the point. Well, a point you need to address. How do you explain that Eichmann helped the Ergen set up training camps on Italian and German soil to prepare for the takeover of Palestine?
I don't know if that's true or not.
Well,
I know that the Stern Gang did try to get an alliance with Germany.
Well, I mean,
but they were rebuffed.
Okay,
were rebuffed. Now, let's look at the situation in Palestine, okay?
Wait, you just said you don't know if it's true. The 1938 book that came out of the B'nai B'rith in Italy.
Secret Masonic Society, right. I'm going to believe that bullshit.
Well, it's a book by Jews for Jews, and there's plenty of those in the library.
So that makes it true.
No, it's a B'nai B'rith pamphlet, for heaven's sakes, from 1938 Italy.
It's a B'nai B'rith organization. I don't believe a word they say.
All right. Well, then this is ridiculous because this is Jews writing to Jews. And furthermore, there's other evidence.
The Germans kept meticulous records, and we do have a preponderance of them, right?
I don't know. How many were kept?
That's how Dave Derby's done all his research, right?
Well, we don't know how many we have and how many we don't. The point is, though, is that.
Well, basically, let me finish. The Zionist Jews.
Where does the pronunciation Zionist come to? I've never heard that before.
Well, okay. I'm a Greek student, right? I read Koine Greek, right?
All right.
And if you read the major like James Strong and his concordance, you'll read his pronunciation index, right?
Yeah, I just think most people aren't going to know what you're talking about when you say Zionist because they're used to hearing
Zionist.
Well,
I'm not going to use Jewish pronunciation, right?
Well,
the I in Greek was pronounced as a long E.
Yeah, I know. I took Greek. I know that, but that is not how most people's ears hear
it. Well, to me, it's Zion because of that, right?
All right, well.
I'm not going to use Jewish pronunciation, right? I'm just not going to use it.
All right.
I'm not going to give them the respect to using it.
I think it's a meaningless point, but go ahead. Okay.
Well, okay, but you know, my pronunciation is the traditional one, and I'll use it.
Okay,
go
ahead.
Okay, I'm an arrogant bastard. Just say that.
No. It's silly. It's silly. But go ahead.
To me, you know, I've read a lot more than I've communicated with people, and even though it hasn't all been about World War II, some of my pronunciations might be private, but it's because of years of seclusion.
All right. I'm sorry to divert. This is a small point. So go ahead with your main point.
They didn't want the British in Palestine because the British were looking out for the Palestinian Arab interests in Palestine.
I know, and that's why Menachem Begin joined the Nazis for a while.
Right. And that's why the Stern Gang, which Menachem Begin was the head of, sought a military alliance with Germany. Of course, they would be rewarded with German weapons and goods that way if they did that, right? And they were basically rebuffed. But the Zionists in Palestine wanted to do that to help them in their cause against the British. That's all. And that's they blew up the King David Hotel, and they did a whole lot of other terrorist acts.
Because the British
were the soldiers every chance they got.
And the British were not cooperating with them. The British were not helping them take over Palestine, so they wanted the British out of there.
Well, right. When you read the Balfour Declaration doesn't guarantee Israeli sovereignty in Palestine.
Okay.
The Balfour Declaration actually has a provision in it that the Jews would be guaranteed access to the homeland, that they weren't guaranteed a sovereign nation.
Okay.
There's no such guarantees as the, you know, the way the Jews eventually won out. There's no such guarantees as that in the Balfour Declaration. It was never part of the deal.
Now, let me come back to just the general theme here, okay? The average listener, and I shouldn't say average, but I mean the normal person listening to this show or that'll hear the archives, they're going to have to decide whether I have more of a bias to find the conclusion I found or whether you have more of a bias because you just say to everything, not legitimate, illegal source, Jewish source. I have to urge people, and again, I'm not trying to sell anything here because people can watch it for free on YouTube. And it's on the second page right now. It's 2 hours and 22 minutes because you'll see a bunch of little excerpts that different people took out. But it's 2 hours and 22 minutes. We put, though, an avalanche of facts from all kinds of different books, Jewish and not Jewish. About half of them are Jewish. And we interpret those facts in a way that most people who watch that video seem to accept. And if you don't watch it and look at all the facts, I don't know how you can be so sure that there isn't a side to Hitler that you don't want to believe because you want to believe he was everything he did. He was almost like God. Everything he did was right in your mind.
No, I never said that.
What sounds like it. Everything he does,
anything.
You justify.
Adolf Hitler cared for his nation. He was a deeply Christian man. There are Christian principles built into National Socialism, which a Jew could not even begin to understand.
I don't agree with that. I do not agree with that at all. Nor was Hitler primarily a Christian.
You're not even a Christian. You're a Catholic.
He was not even. Well, that's another debate. And I'm telling you, if we ever get on here and debate Protestantism or Christian identity versus Catholicism, you will be completely devastated because your basic principle is total confusion and
did
no way to know anything.
You think I'm going to debate from the viewpoint of Protestantism versus Catholicism? You're wrong. I'm going to debate you from the viewpoint of ancient history
and the
Bible
and the
fulfillment of the covenants and the creation of the Catholic Church and what originally Christianity was.
Oh, that'll be completely 1,000% manufactured history. St. Augustine.
Manufactured history? How about if I cite all my sources?
We'll see what those sources are. St. Augustine, near the 4th century, said, I would not even believe the Bible if it was not for the authority of the Catholic Church. That was St. Augustine.
Is that Augustus Pippo? He wrote in the 6th century, I think.
Okay, well, then 6th century. I would not even believe the Bible if it was not for the authority of the Catholic Church. That was 800 years or 900 years before Luther decided to say, everybody interpret the Bible for yourself. Introducing total confusion, the basic principle.
Well, the Catholic Church didn't exist as we know it until Justinian, and it gets its power.
Well, that's because it was in the catacombs.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Conner. It says in the scriptures that there must be sex amongst us.
There must be what?
S-E-C-T-S, sex.
Must be sex.
Yes, well, it must be.
Well, look, that why believe anything in Scripture if everybody's interpreted for themselves?
Well, because I understand that the Scriptures, I understand what dates the manuscripts date to, right?
Well, that doesn't...
And I understand the fulfillment of prophecy in Scripture, right?
Well, I would have... This is another show, but I urge people
to watch the...
And we found a lot more out since this DVD came out in 2003... And try to fit all these facts into somewhere else. You know, Hitler was the go-between in 1919. He was working for the communists in Munich, going between the communist leaders and the barracks. And at that point, Otto Strasser again was fighting on the Free Corps, which eventually evicted the communists. And I had Carolyn Yeager try to tell me that Hitler was a prisoner. Virtually, she was saying he was a prisoner in Munich when he could have walked out any time he wanted. That's one of the things Otto Strasser cites in the Prisoner of Ottawa, one of the three things he cites that need, 1953 now, that need to be investigated about Hitler: his murky origins, his working for the communists in 1919, and his mysterious disappearance at the end of World War II. Everyone assumed Hitler disappeared from the time of 1945, at least till I was in high school in 1967. Almost everybody assumed that he had disappeared because his body was never found. Can you imagine?
I didn't think that way when I was young. I was told he committed suicide and they destroyed the body, and I always believed that.
Well, what year was that?
I don't know. It's all my life.
Well, no, what year? 80s, 70s? I mean,
I'm 47 now, so I mean, it's been ever since I was reading history about it.
Well, that was not what the people near the scene of the crime said. Hitler's body disappeared without a trace.
You know, there's something I want to go back to.
So did 6 million Jews disappear without a trace?
I'm not arguing.
6 million bodies.
I'm not arguing for the Hollywood version of the Holocaust. And we debunk it in the video. We completely debunk the Hollywood version of the Holocaust in the video.
Well, the entire Holocaust needs to be debunked.
Well, no, Jews were rounded. No, sorry. Jews were rounded up by Hitler. Many were sent to Palestine that would go, and others were put in concentration camps.
So that's a Holocaust? That's not a Holocaust.
Well, many of them at the end of the war died as disease.
They died of typhus and starvation, right?
I agree. And then there were...
And they were probably not even half of the concentration camp population when that happened, right? The Holocaust was in Dresden, right? The Holocaust
was a Holocaust, but
and
probably...
Hamburg. That was a real Holocaust. The Holocaust was in the Ukraine at the hands of the Soviets.
Yeah,
that was a real Holocaust.
Agree. Well, we agree on all that. We agree on all that. The question is Hitler the most one of the two most clever things that was perpetrated on humanity in the 20th century, the other being the takeover of the Vatican in 58, which still isn't known by but a handful of people. So that's the question. Was Hitler what he appeared to be from either the mainstream or the neo-Nazi type view?
Hitler was absolutely what he appeared to be, and your version of history doesn't add up to squat.
That's why I ask people to, they're going to have to watch the video because, and they can do it for free, so I'm not trying to sell anything, because you haven't watched it, and you're just dismissing everything.
I have watched your video.
I know you have.
I go down your website, and I see IBM and Hitler, and I see a Jew, and then I see the slander about Eichmann, and then I see the Jewish source that you have right at the top of the website, which is also false, that the Zionist leaders who now
Are you familiar with the book Perfidy, which is in our video? The Perfidy by
and that was written by a damn Jew.
Ben Hecht. Yeah, but he was
Ben Hecht.
He was wait a minute.
I'm not
going
to read anything written by a Jew.
Oh, that is ridiculous. That is an absurd
thing. It's ridiculous. When a Jew's moving its lips, he's lying.
That is not always true. And Ben Hecht was a supporter of the Ergun. He was disillusioned.
I guess you don't believe Christ in John 8:44. I guess you don't believe
And he was speaking to the Jews.
John.
He was speaking to the Jews that rejected him. Surely you're not saying that. You're saying everything that comes out of a Jew's pen or mouth is a lie. Huh?
They were Edomites. Mr.
But wait a minute, though. Let's go just to this book. But anybody can pick up Perfidy. It was censored for years, but then when the internet came in, it came out again in the 90s. And Perfidy was his book about how the Martin Greenwald trial in Israel finally got so hot that it exposed the Secretary of State under Ben Gurion Kastner as having collaborated with the Nazis, as many Jews were doing, because Nazism and Zionism are two sides of the same coin. And they ended up, after he got convicted in the trial of collaborating with the Nazis, he was, quote, shot by a bum one night and killed a few weeks later. That book goes into the elaborate cooperation of the Nazis with the Zionists. And at the end of the thing, Ben Hecht throws up his hands and says, "What's going on? I thought when we had a country, we would be better than other countries. We're worse than other countries," which what we've been doing since we founded the State of Israel. So,
He was one of the few true believers then.
Yeah, he must have been. He was the assistant writer on Gone with the Wind, and he said some horrible things about Christianity. But he was disillusioned that the frontline Ergun were often betrayed by Ben-Gurion. And it was an Ergun, a former Ergun lawyer that convicted Kastner to the shock of Israel. And
you know,
of course,
I really don't care about Jewish intrigue, Mr. Condit.
Well,
I want to get back to Hitler.
See, that is a know-nothing statement there, because it sheds light on history.
Well, this is a very obscure event we're talking about.
Everything we bring out is obscure because the Jews don't want it known. The Jews don't push that.
It doesn't have to do with Hitler. Do you know why Hitler invaded the West in 1940?
The what?
Invaded the West.
The West?
Yeah, France, the Low Countries. Do you know why he did that?
Well, I go ahead and say I don't know that I know everything about it.
Well, I mean, you don't know the reasons why he did it? I mean, come on, you're claiming he's a Jew.
I would say that he started an unwinnable multi-front war, and the one that he won, Dunkirk, he blew it and gave it away.
No, I'll tell you why. On May 10th, 1940, when Chamberlain was ousted and Churchill took his place, Churchill promised the Jews in Britain that he would bomb German cities. The Germans could only respond to that through a land campaign, and they finally invaded the West. That's put an end to the phony war in the West. Otherwise, they would have had to come to a negotiated peace eventually, because neither side was attacking the other. Not until that terrorist Churchill got in on May 10th, 1940, after the Norway debacle. Then they started bombing German cities on May 11th. The Germans, on the same day that Chamberlain
was
out.
Who bombed German cities on May 11th?
I'm sorry, John, let me make one correction. May 10th, 1940 is when the hostilities started with France.
And that's when Churchill took over.
Who was bombing German cities?
Chamberlain was prime minister until November 9th, 1940, right? He
came in power on May 10th, 1940, the day the Germans attacked the West.
Who came in power? Who?
Churchill.
Okay, I'm lost. I still don't see why Hitler had to invade France because of that.
Well, France was at war with Germany, too.
Okay, but why did he... there was a period, and I can't remember the guy's name, and I need to find this book, because Dr. Rusnowski told me there's an Irish name that wrote a book about how Hitler tried to keep peace right before World War II. And he said, if you want to find out why people support Hitler, you'll see it in this book, because he realized the war was going to be a disaster. Plus, Hitler didn't want to be odd man out, and he really did was moving heaven and earth to try to keep peace during this so-called period before or at the phony war. And I just will throw that out in case either of you two know what book that is that talk about his efforts. And I think it was an Irish name that wrote it. But, yeah, the Jews were screaming that it was a phony war because there was no carnage taking place. But I'm not clear why you're saying at that point he had to attack France. I still am not clear on
that. But they were allies with Britain, and if Britain were going to bomb German cities, the French were going to respond. The Germans could only respond to that through a land campaign.
Okay.
That's the only reason how they could prevent the British from getting air bases close enough to Germany.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
It makes a total
I'm sorry,
sense.
John, I'm confusing the date that Chamberlain died with the day he left office. He died November 9th, 1940. But
that's the,
now,
otherwise
now,
they
now
would
now
have invaded
the West. Thought.
Well, you were talking
well,
about...
Well, it was called the phony war, Jim. It's called the phony war by mainstream historians.
Right.
When Hitler invaded Poland, Chamberlain, as I explained earlier, was conciliatory towards Hitler and Germany.
Right.
And even though the invasion of Poland broke Chamberlain's, if Chamberlain doesn't act, he has an agreement to defend Poland. Chamberlain did make that agreement. But even though Hitler invaded Poland in 1939, along with the Soviets, Chamberlain didn't do anything. There was no hostility until Churchill became the prime minister.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha. Now, but here's...
And Hitler... I believe Hitler relied on that continued policy of conciliation and appeasement, but it didn't work, right?
Okay, now here's something, though. We're now talking on the level of, like, who's better, Obama or Bush? Who's better, Hitler or Stalin or Churchill? Now, David Irving, what his research does do, he makes the point that when you start to compare individual events, often Hitler looks like the statesman, and Churchill and Roosevelt, especially Churchill and Stalin, of course, look like the total bloody scoundrels, right? So I agree with that. Once you get to the point of comparing what were the actual moves once World War II became inevitable, what our thing focuses on, though, is the parts of the war and facts about the war and Hitler that are not known by either the revisionists or the mainstream media, obviously, and they are a total shock to the average sincere American who sees this information, who wasn't even aware that the Zionists and Hitler were cooperating during World War II. The average person is
aware. The Zionists and Hitler cooperating.
Well, I think this is a dirty game.
Up to a point,
you should know that you have to work for some
sense.
People you don't want to.
I don't do it. I don't do it, but I mean...
When you're a politician, that's why they call you that, because you want to be able to create peace if peace can exist. Hitler wasn't totally aware of just what a bunch of devils these Jews were. He knew he had a good idea, but he still thought he could work with some of them.
Well, I think that you're twisted. You're not. I'm not saying in any particular case because I don't know what you're thinking of now. But everything is twisted by the Hitler apologists. Every last thing, so that he comes out shining star, and it just ignores so
many. An honorable man is a shining star.
Well, but he wasn't an honorable man. He was in all kinds of deals the German people did not know about. Now, are you denying there was a transfer agreement?
No, I'm not denying that.
Right, well,
that was honorable. That's what you don't understand.
It was not.
The transfer agreement was honorable.
It was not honorable.
Wasn't it honorable?
Well, let me tell you why.
Out of Germany, that was his stated political goal. His stated political goal was to free Germany of the Jews.
Yeah, but
And he was operating towards that goal in the most peaceful way he could find.
Yeah, the problem is a true Christian and white statesman would never have given the Jews the one piece of land or helped them get the one piece of land that they wanted that nobody else wanted to have.
Whoa. That land doesn't mean a damn thing.
It sure does.
You're worshiping the land.
No, it's the holy land.
Did you know something? You know what the Bible says? You know what the Bible says about that land? Jeremiah chapter 19, I will destroy this city like this broken bottle, and it will never be made whole again. And that destruction came in 70 A.D.
Yeah, but that's not the point is that's where Christ lived, died, resurrected. That's the Holy Land. You don't put the people of John 8:44 in charge of the land of Christ's birth.
Know what the prophecy says about that? I loved Jacob and I hated Edom, and Esau will return and rebuild the desolate places.
Okay,
and he will build up, but I will throw down. The Jews are Esau. You want to talk about that history?
That's a different debate.
And I have documentary evidence, right?
Okay, but wait a minute.
From the first century, not from the 50s.
Well, let me talk about 1904. Let me talk about 1904. Theodore Herzl, the so-called founder of Zionism, even though it was Moses Hess, I think, 1825, he asked for an audience with Pope Pius X, who was the Pope from 1903 to 1914. And his people recorded it, Herzl's people recorded it, and Pius X's people recorded it, and they both said the same thing. The ultimate result of the meeting was Herzl said, we would like your support for the Jews to return to Palestine and establish our own country. Pius X said to them, since you do not support our Savior, we will not support your enterprise. Now, that was a Christian and a white leader talking. Hitler cooperated and gave the Jews the one thing, helped to get the Jews, get the one thing that nobody else wanted them to have. And he did it surreptitiously. He did it underhandedly. And nobody knew it was happening. It didn't, until decades later it came out.
But first, let me tell you something. Lord Balfour did that in 1916, not Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler may have accelerated the Zionist plot slightly,
yeah.
That's all he did.
More
that's
than
all. It was inevitable that it was going to happen. The Jews were already pulling all kinds of treachery in Palestine. They were moving there in the 20s and 30s, and they were pulling all kinds of treachery in Palestine Adolf Hitler could have assisted them with it.
Yeah, but the result of World War I.
1916. Yeah, 1916. Hitler was only 21 years old. He was only a corporal.
The point is when he did get the power, he was a linchpin in pushing the plan forward, whether he fully intended it or not.
They would have pushed their plan forward regardless.
Well, they might not have succeeded if all the Catholic monarchs and hadn't been knocked off their thrones and the Tsar of Russia hadn't been knocked off. They might not have succeeded.
So I guess Adolf Hitler was responsible for the Tsar of Russia and the Catholics.
No, but the Rothschild bankers were the same ones that funded Hitler in 1929. And I don't know how you can dismiss Van Papen. I don't know how you can dismiss
because he worked within the system to come to power to Germany.
Well,
but as soon as he got the power, he cut the bankers off and made Germany independent of the bankers. That's not something a Rothschild agent does.
It just doesn't
add up.
Look,
it took those bankers 6 years, almost 7 years, to bring war against Germany from the time it was declared.
Yeah, but I'm not conceding that Hitler was ever not operating, at least in part, with the approval of the bankers. Because, for instance, Hitler never...
He was operating in part with the approval of some of the bankers until 1933, and even for a while after 1933.
Well, even during...
Because those bankers cared about their own pocketbooks and their own...
The Jews don't care about money.
They didn't want to see Stalin end up with Hitler was the only answer to Stalin.
The Jews will lose $1 billion to push forward their program. The fact that they're primarily after money is not true. They will lose billions to push their plan forward because they know they can print more.
The Jews are on the same side again.
At the top, they pretty much are because they kill those who get out of line. But
but all the Jews that supported Hitler weren't at the top.
And I'm not sure that of course there's infighting, and there's infighting to this minute. Look at the Rupert Murdoch situation where there's some infighting going on between top Jews. But the point is you're skipping over Dunkirk. That is the most absurd thing ever.
I'm not skipping over Dunkirk. Dunkirk
thoroughly.
You're just making up something about Dunkirk.
I'm not making it up. It's in the history. Mike, go ahead. What do you want to say about Dunkirk?
No, his name's John, by the way.
Oh, sorry. Now wait. Is Mike still on?
He might be.
You're the fellow that's hosting the show. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, Dunkirk was the result of the Germans surrounding the British and the and some French forces around that area of northern France. The only reason why Hitler put the stop on the panzers there was because he wanted to reconcile with Britain and not cause them such a terrible defeat that their honor would have been destroyed and they would have to, let's say, get revenge.
Oh, no, wait a minute. In war, that's what you do. You humiliate the other side and take – he could have taken him
captive. Hitler was an Anglophile.
No. Hitler didn't want to humiliate England.
Well, that, I don't believe
Hitler
that.
Hitler wanted
absurd.
To conciliate England. There's a huge difference.
Yeah, that is absurd. If he had taken them all captive and –
No.
Let me finish a sentence.
You're accusing the guy of being a Rothschild agent and a Jew because you think you're a better Monday morning quarterback.
No. Anybody in war. There's no example like this in the history of war where you've got a nation defeated.
Actually, there is.
Where you got a nation defeated and instead of taking them captive and then making your peace terms that would have restored the patriots to England, to running England, you send them back so the Rothschilds are running and have their army back.
I'm sorry.
Hitler was not your average politician.
I'm sorry.
He
preferred to have peace with England. He was an Anglophile. In fact, there were eyewitnesses of this in the high command when he started speaking well of England during the Dunkirk debacle.
It's
in the book. It's in Little Hearts, the military historian's book, Little Heart. He records that conversation that was witnessed by the German high staff, and they were shocked at why Hitler was saying these things.
And I would have been too. Because if you loved England, you wanted to get the Rothschilds out and the Patriots in, and you had your chance there to take their army away from them.
Well, you know, they lost all their equipment at Dunkirk anyway. A few hundred thousand men without arms is not going to really do anything.
Well, they were remanufactured arms.
It was a British expeditionary force. It wasn't even a regular army. It wasn't even.
But it would have neutralized. And this is what, when people think about this, they just don't buy this, that Hitler suddenly went soft when he could have had a chance to deprive the Rothschilds of a lot of their main fighting force. And said, now we're going to restore the Patriots to England.
He was thinking England, not Rothschilds.
But he himself said the Rothschilds controlled England. That's why it's so absurd. Because he suddenly had to forget that the Rothschilds were controlling England when he didn't press his victory.
Maybe he thought that the British did have control of their own country enough so that they can put a stop to these bankers.
Well, he knew that
thought that.
No, well, that would be pretty nice.
Hitler clearly didn't understand the great degree to which he didn't understand the degree to which
he didn't
control England and America.
He did in his speeches. He
understood that they had a lot of control over the English and the American economies and a lot of influence in the governments, but he didn't. He didn't even. I don't have the Rothschilds mentioned in my. Let me search.
Well,
again.
He talked about.
But,
I'm not. He surely knows who some of the top. I mean, you can't tell me Hitler didn't know the Rothschilds were a prominent banking family, for heaven's sakes. But the point is, these are tortured explanations you're giving, and that is why when people.
It's not a tortured explanation. It's a straightforward explanation. It was von Rundstedt. That issued the stop order.
Hitler enforced that order, Bill. Hitler enforced that order.
Hitler approved the order 2 days later.
How does that exonerate Hitler from approving the order? I don't get what your point is here, and I don't know why a normal German general.
With that aside, the reason why Hitler did not want to inflict such a terrible defeat on England because he did not want to hurt their honor.
So
they would have to get revenge.
They don't have any way to get revenge when they don't have their army.
If you read Mein Kampf, Britain has always, Hitler knew that Britain has always invested as much as possible to gain victory no matter what the cost. He said that in Mein Kampf.
Okay, well, so is Germany.
And Hitler was an Anglophile in Mein Kampf, but he didn't mention the Rothschilds.
Okay, well, the point is that you when you're in the middle of a war, you defeat the enemy. You don't worry about their honor.
Well, that's fine.
Whoever heard
yeah.
of that?
If it was me, you know, if it was me, if I wasn't such you know, such an Anglophile as Hitler was, yeah, I would have. Not one man jack of them would have gotten away. But I'm sorry, but I wasn't Hitler.
Well, you're apologizing. The more logical explanation is he was in deals and the war wasn't working out the way the Rothschilds wanted it to work out, and he let him go. That's the more logical explanation. And
no,
only those who are
ridiculous.
Only those who are committed.
That's absolutely unfounded. You cannot establish that. That is not historical.
It happened.
That is pure conjecture.
It happened.
And as somebody brought up in the chat room, if Hitler was in their pocket, he didn't issue the order anyway, so why are you blaming him in the first place?
He did issue the order, and he approved it. What do you mean? You're trying. This is the old Hitler didn't know whenever it becomes an impossible situation. He was the guy at the top. You said he gave the speech before the German generals of how they had to let him go. The British and the Germans on the scene were astounded in their diaries. Both of them couldn't believe that Hitler was letting them go.
Well, actually the von Rundstedt actually was.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he was one of those half Jews.
He was the field marshal and the commanding officer at the time. He was the general. And commanding officer at the time.
Who was the one that disobeyed? There was orders coming all the way to stop, stop, stop. Somebody disobeyed those orders and kept going to Dunkirk.
No, I believe it was one of the Panzer Corps commanders, and he kept pushing, and then finally they told him to withdraw behind a certain canal.
Right, and he was incredulous at the time because he knew he
well,
was.
Well, of course, if you're a winning general, you want to bag all the enemy.
And that's a normal war. That's a normal war.
Well, Hitler wasn't the normal man.
Yeah, he was a compromised Rothschild player.
Let me get off this subject now.
Guys, I think 98% of the people listen who are not neo-Nazis are siding with me on Dunkirk. It is an absurd decision.
It is not absurd when you understand Hitler and you
I don't want to understand Hitler. I want to see what he did, not what he said.
Okay, let's talk about your. Let's go to Moscow now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard you earlier about Moscow, and you're totally off base on that.
We're talking about Barbarossa.
Yes, Moscow, Barbarossa. It's part of the same campaign.
Right.
Now, the German generals wanted to go for Moscow.
Right.
They, late in the year, when it was getting cold, they decided to launch the Operation Typhoon, which was their operation, their ill-fated operation to capture Moscow. They tried a double envelopment that worked so well for them like two or three times earlier in the campaign. It didn't work because they were at the end of their logistical tether. And their combat strengths were getting low. It was the winter was setting in, and they did not expect the amount of Russian resistance that they came up against. That's why they failed. It wasn't because Hitler told them to go for it and then pulled back support on them.
That's what I'll have to research. That's what many of the accounts say, that they were going for it and they couldn't believe when the stop orders came and they said we're gonna. We want you to reverse.
Well,
and Hitler said
Hitler knew better. Hitler knew better because going from Moscow was diverting effort to his plans to take Leningrad, cut off the lend-lease routes from the north and the south into the Caucasus where the oil fields were. That was more important.
Well, then why did all the German soldiers that were there starve to death eventually?
Well, they didn't all starve to death. They had maybe 130,000 frostbite cases during that period. And of course, they didn't starve at all. That's nonsense.
Well, I mean, the German generals were and screaming and demanding to go forward, and many of them concluded Hitler was insane when he stopped.
When the Russians counterattacked with their Siberian forces, along with the other reserves that they had with their new T-34 tanks, they were dying to go back to Smolensk. And Hitler gave them a stand fast order, and that's what saved the day for them. And it was, and although, yeah, they suffered a lot of loss, they had a retreat in some, many cases. Guderian had a retreat like 200 miles, but, you know, it was absolutely necessary, or else they would have lost everything.
Hitler's war plan was to take St. Petersburg and the Russian oil fields in the south.
No, no, that's Leningrad. It wasn't named St. Petersburg then.
It was Leningrad, yeah.
I mean, I'm just clarifying. I don't accept their renaming.
Well,
of
I understand that St. Petersburg is Leningrad. I'm sorry if
I just want to make clear to anybody listening what we're talking about, because they had changed the name, even though I don't appreciate.
Yeah, it was Petrograd. Then before that was St. Petersburg. Now
it's if he takes Leningrad, that cuts off Lend-Lease supplies to the easy route of Lend-Lease supplies to Russia, right? It cuts that off, because now if anything gets shipped to Russia, it has to go up through the White Sea, right, which is pretty rough weather and a much longer trip and very cold. And it was a very good strategic move to take Leningrad. If he takes the oil fields, well, Stalin might have 20 million soldiers, but he can't move them. So it doesn't matter how many men Stalin has. But the generals, von Trotius, and I can't even pronounce his name right? And Halder, Franz Halder, Walter von Brockitsch, I still can't say it right. They resisted Hitler every step of the way. They filed false reports that
what?
They acted very treacherously, and, because they wanted Moscow. They wanted Moscow. Hitler didn't want Moscow.
Well, I mean, Bill, if they could get it, he let them go get it, but you know what?
He let them, right, and they did very well at the beginning. Hitler gave his officers a lot of latitude.
Well,
and even to the point where they disobeyed orders. He gave them a lot of latitude.
So
there were political enemies that he cut off for various reasons, but most of his officers, that was his fault probably, was he had too much respect for an established officer corps that despised him.
So the reports that the German generals that were getting close to Moscow were incredulous, were screaming that they were going to disobey orders, and then the orders kept coming, stop, stop, stop. Those are all not true?
Yes. I would say that they're probably suspect, yes.
No, Bill, I can tell you straight out. The 3rd and 4th Panzer armies were trying to surround Moscow from the north. Guderian tried to surround it from the south. They were pushing. They were just at the end of their logistical line of supplies. They could not go any further.
That's because Hitler cut off sent the supplies.
Oh, nonsense! What are you? You're making out this guy who wants to lose the war.
Well, there's some parts of it look like it. Parts of it look like it. Why was IV Farben never bombed in Germany? They were a Jewish company supplying Hitler with.
Yeah, well, that doesn't make Hitler a Rothschild agent. Hitler wasn't sending the planes over Germany.
Well,
was he?
But
were they doing that too?
Well, it indicates that he was.
No, it indicates
used by
them. It indicates that some Jew with an awful lot of influence told Roosevelt and Churchill not to bomb IG Farben plants, right?
While Roosevelt and Churchill knew that they were supplying the Nazis with key raw materials to continue the war.
Yeah, well, the Jews care about their financial interests very often first.
Yeah.
And that's very explainable. They figured that they could have that collateral damage and still win the war and save their plants. I mean, that's not a stretch. That you can't blame that on Hitler. Hitler isn't the one pulling the triggers on the bombs. Hitler's not the one picking the targets for the planes.
Yeah, but
people in London are doing that.
All we're saying is, without these facts, you cannot understand all of World War II.
You don't have any facts!
I'll have to
mention a whole bunch of facts to you.
You've
done
a lot of situations and conjectures.
I'll have to let the listeners and those who watch the video determine if we have no facts, and we have tremendous historical
facts you have that you claim are from Jews that wrote after Nuremberg or after the war or whatever.
No. Jetzinger.
Some Jew wrote a book. This German said this and that, and
Jetzinger
you're rough with it.
Jetzinger was not a Jew, and he published his book in 1956, but he had been doing his research since the 30s. And it was in his book that it talked about Hitler destroying his own, the birthplace of his father and all those graveyards that were around Bernau at the end. And there's other sources supporting that, too. As Dr. Rusnowski said, when we find somebody destroying evidence, we usually call him guilty. In other words, guilty of trying to cover up his ancestry in this case.
You have absolutely no evidence of that.
Well, and it's a lot of arrows, and believe me, the Jews will admit this eventually, just like they did of Lenin, that Hitler was part Jewish. But they're not going to admit it yet because it's still too close to exposing what really happened in World War II, which was.
If you had all this great stuff in your DVD and you were not sure of it, you'd have that on the front page of your website and instead of quotes
The website is just a summary of a teaser of what's on the thing. But as I say,
that's why I'm not going to watch your movie, Jim.
Website
summary is trash.
It's free. Oh, well, that's convincing.
Summary is quotes from Jews, and it's slander against Eichmann, and it's this crap about William Patrick Hitler that's easily debunkable.
It's Ben Hecht.
I'm reading down the front page of your website.
Ben Hecht is a slander,
conjecture, Jew.
No,
that's what I see.
This is very.
You have a laundry list of stories by people, but no facts really to back them up. They're not facts unless they can be verifiable in some way.
If there was something on the front page of your website that caught my interest. That would convince me to watch that movie, I would watch it.
The video.
The front page of the website has not one fact on it that you can establish that would make me think maybe I should go watch that video.
No, the video is for free on YouTube, so it's not like.
Well, that's fine, but it's not free because it's 2 hours of my time, and your website. It does nothing to convince me to spend 2 hours.
Well, I've said plenty on this call that should.
Shlomo and Ben Hecht just ain't worth 2 hours of my time.
How about, well, there's all kinds of sources that you apparently aren't aware of, like Rabbi Wiseman in the United States.
And that's not worth 5 minutes of my time.
I mean, this idea that anything the Jews wrote, or Lenny Brenner, his 51 documents on the Zionist.
You know, the Jews have 6 million reasons to reinvent history about Hitler, right?
But wait a minute.
The mainstream is trying
to suppress the idea that Hitler cooperated with the Zionists. To this minute, they're trying to suppress it.
Of course they are. That makes their 6 million
That's
stories
why we
fall
made
apart.
The video.
So that's the only reason why they do that is because it soils their show of business.
But
that still doesn't make Hitler a Rothschild agent.
But the circumstantial evidence and the funding he received.
No, the circumstantial evidence is very plain. Hitler and the Zionists had a common goal. To get the Jews out of Germany was Hitler's goal, and to get them to Palestine was the Zionist goal. It's a perfect storm.
As I said on the video, to hear the Hitler apologist is a marriage made in heaven, but it is actually a marriage made in hell.
Any marriage a Jew is involved in is going to be made in hell.
70 million Europeans, white Europeans, lie dead at the end of this debacle, World War II.
That's what you should have on the front page of your website. Who's responsible for that?
The
Jew Roosevelt and the commie agent Churchill.
And Hitler.
No. Hitler was a Christian.
No, he was not a Christian. He was not a Christian.
How do you know he's not a Christian?
We have in the video his
established that he is a Christian.
How he despised Catholicism as a kid. He spit out
holy.
That's
a lie.
It is not a lie.
That's a flat out lie. Hitler said over and over again in Mein Kampf that he appreciated the importance of the two religions, right, Lutheranism and Catholicism, in order to keep a moral structure.
Yeah, he was looking at it.
Christianity didn't come out of Hitler's mouth. It came out of his actions.
He didn't honor
Christ with his lips. He honored Christ with his policies.
Pius the 11th.
National Socialism is built on Christian principles.
No, it isn't. Pius the 11th issued an encyclical.
Yeah, you've been reading too many Jews. You've been reading Shlomo way too much.
Such as John 8:44.
I'm perfectly aware of it. I'm perfectly aware that, but that is a ahistorical, know nothing position. You can look at books that Jews write, and you can see, you can maybe not buy their line, but you can see the facts that they're reporting are true.
When a Jew tells the truth, it's only to cover up for another lie that they told earlier.
Well, that is not necessarily true. Are you saying that Lenny Brenner's, for instance, let's take Lenny Brenner. I know he's a socialist. He lives in New York City still.
Or Noam Chomsky. Let's take him too.
Well, Chomsky is definitely ultimately a Jewish supremacist, and maybe Lenny Brenner is too. But are you saying that the facts that Lenny Brenner has in his books and in his 51 documents pamphlet, that those are that he's got a lot of false facts in there?
I never read his book.
Well, see, this
and
is...
And I wouldn't read his book, because he's a Jew.
All right, well, this is ridiculous.
Well, I mean,
why is it ridiculous?
Because there's plenty of books written by Jews that have a lot of valuable facts in them. How about The 13th Tribe by Arthur Kessler?
Arthur Kessler didn't invent that history. Heinrich Goetz wrote it in the 1840s. I got it upstairs on a shelf.
Well, I can believe you.
He was a Jew too. Some
of these books, like Edwin Black's, are probably limited hangouts. They don't want someone to get behind the truth that the top Zionists were totally cooperating with the Nazis, so it acts like it's all IBM and Thomas Watson. So these are limited hangouts to preempt the full truth, probably.
Yeah,
but
that book, IBM and the Nazis, that's a show of business book that was released by the publisher on the same day that the class action lawsuit was filed.
That's all it is.
Holocaust.
It's
trying to squeeze the goyim for more money.
Yeah, but it's based on the truth of IBM cooperating.
It's based on just trash. I mean, how many
American
companies were dealing with Hitler? Hitler wasn't the enemy in 1933. They could sell him anything they wanted.
So he
wasn't doing anything that was illegal or against American law. They could sell him all the computers in the world. What the hell was wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it, but they were also helping him catalog the Jews so they could be rounded up.
I don't know if that's true or if that's Jewish propaganda. I would assume that it's probably Jewish propaganda.
Well, this is
because
an awful lot
of Jews were free in Germany during the Second World War.
True.
And that's very true.
Are you familiar with the book Hitler's Jewish Soldiers? 79 top gen, nine, nine.
Well,
top...
that proves that the IBM thing is just bullshit.
What? How's that?
You know, you've got a lot of dichotomies in your thinking.
So do you.
It's not the beast monster rounding up all the Jews to send them off to concentration camps.
It's not dichotomies. They're resolved.
But most of the Jews in concentration camps were criminals and active.
No, no. There was a lot of normal, everyday Jews that were rounded up and taken from their homes by time 42 happened. There's no question the Jews are rounded up. I know of someone who was there. She was about a 9-year-old girl. I don't know if she's still alive. She said, "We knew the Jews were being rounded up, but we didn't know why." And
that's more Jewish propaganda.
No, it isn't. It's from a lady in Cincinnati that talked directly to me that it was in a Catholic in the pro-life movement like me. She was just a normal little old lady here in Cincinnati, 100% German.
What you're missing is that there were still Jews in Berlin at the end of the war.
I'm not missing that.
It's in our
video.
And therefore, you know, yeah, they were rounding up Jews, but these people were criminals.
No, they
were communist agitators.
No, they rounded up thousands and tens of thousands who were meant to go to
Palestine. You read way too many Jewish sources and sources that are convenient to the Jewish left, testimony
I'm the only person in the United States that has put radio ads on in my congressional campaign since 2002 attacking the Jewish lobby, urging that they be that some of them be rounded up and arrested on WLW radio, 300,000. So I don't think you can pull that you're more anti-Jewish lobby than I am, or anti-Jewish establishment. I come at this.
Well, let me read one scripture, right? I just want to read one scripture so that you know where
and
I'm
going to endorse it. I'm going to endorse it. I don't know what you're going to read. I'm going to say yes.
That this is 2 John 9 to 11, right?
Okay.
Each who going forth and not abiding in the teaching of Christ has not God.
Right.
He abiding in the teaching, he also has the Father and the Son. If one comes to you and does not bear this teaching, do not receive him into the house, and do not even speak to welcome him. For he speaking to welcome him takes a share in his evil works. And that's just one scripture, but that's a pretty clear one, why I don't give Jews any credence at all.
Well, I don't believe.
If you're a Jew, you need to leave. If a Jew moves his lips, he's lying. The same apostle asks, who is a liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ? These people, if they're going to hold the German people responsible for the blood of 6 million martyrs, which is their claim, right? Because 6 million, of course, didn't die in the Holocaust.
Right.
There was no Holocaust, and perhaps 200,000 to 300,000 Jews died in Europe during World War II. However, that's even very low compared to the numbers of Christians that died. It's disproportionately low.
Right.
But let
me
say that
what about the Holocaust they perpetrated in World War I, right after that? That phony Holocaust that they
They made the same claim. After the Romans
destroyed Jerusalem. That's in our video, that false claim.
And after the Romans destroyed Jerusalem, the Jews in the Talmud, they wrote that millions of Jews were destroyed by the Romans in Jerusalem. They wrote that rivers of blood were carrying boulders down to the sea.
Absurd.
The Holocaust story is thousands of years old, right? And it was bunk then, and it's bunk today.
Well, we discredit that in the. I mean, have you ever heard of the book Mischlinge, Hitler's Third Race? Hitler classified a lot of half Jews as Aryans. He had all these 150,000 part Jewish soldiers in the army. We go into all that. He had a Jewish cook. Hans Frank was a half Jewish. Was his lawyer.
Well, that all.
He had a Jewish doctor.
Hitler's a Rothschild agent. That only proves that Hitler wasn't the beast that the anti-Semitic beast Jews make him out to be.
It could go either way, but we made.
And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't jive with your idea that he was rounding up normal Jewish people and putting them in concentration camps.
We made the point.
It's so many. Normal, like there could be a normal Jew. If so many normal Jewish people were working for him.
Well,
you know, which one is it? It's one or the other.
The point we made is all of that totally debunks the idea that Hitler was trying to kill every Jew, which is the mainstream claim. So we're trying to get to the truth on both sides. But him having all these Jews around him is when he's giving screeching anti-Semitic speeches. Also doesn't make sense. I mean, he's got a Jewish doctor, Jewish cook, half-Jewish lawyer, 9 top Jewish generals, 150,000 part Jewish soldiers, 79 half-Jewish major, high-ranking officers. I mean, come on. And Rosnowski's point was the Nazi leadership is every one of them will eventually be proven to be part Jewish. Now, I don't know if that'll prove to be true.
Well, that's just,
but
that,
a lot
that
of them will.
That must be a Jew saying that.
A lot
that,
of them.
That must just must be a Jew saying
no,
that.
No, Rosnowski
most
was
of the Jews in, that were in positions in Germany are already known.
No.
And they were known then.
Well, you know Milch. You certainly agree that Milch, the head of the
And I'm not saying that there were no, you know, that Hitler was the brightest man in the world, but he was a good Christian man.
He was
and
not
his
Christian.
Political philosophy was a Christian philosophy.
He was not.
And he expressed it. He was definitely a Christian.
No.
He was definitely. You could yell all you want. He was definitely a Christian.
I'm not yelling. I'm saying he wasn't. And again, Pope Pius IX issued an encyclical in German against the Nazis.
Well, you never even read his book, Mr.
The
Nazis.
So
how can you know what he said about Christianity, about his own personal
life? I'm not talking about only what he said. I'm talking what he did. I'm looking at the actions. And
he looked at
Christianity as a political pawn in the game of his worldview of how to control politics.
That's absolutely not true. That's Jewish propaganda again. You just recite Jewish propaganda at the drop of a hat.
It's my own observation because, see,
it's my observation through reading his book and through watching his documentary films. And through understanding that his political philosophy is indeed Christian. It's certainly not Catholic, but it certainly is Christian.
Well,
confuse Catholicism with Christianity.
Well, that is an ignorant statement, Wayne.
Popery is not Christianity.
Protestantism is a invention of the devil to divide
Christians. We're not Protestants, Mr. Condit.
Well, what are you?
Well, we're Christian identists.
Oh, that's Protestantism. That's another variation of
Protestantism. You say it's Protestantism. That's your label.
Well, it's basic principle is total confusion. Everybody interprets Scripture for themselves.
No, the Catholic Church was not invented in the first century.
Yes, it
wasn't.
It was not
founded by the apostles. All kinds of evidence of that.
No,
in the New Testament.
Christ looked at Peter and said, "Thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church." And I know they go
wrong right now.
Oh,
you know what? I
quoted Scripture. That was a quote of Scripture. I just
gave.
Wait a second.
All right, hold on. Yeah, we're getting
off topic again. It would be good to get on this topic for a long program, a couple of hours.
This is all this absurd pebble. How long are we going?
A Petra is bedrock, and a Petros is a stone, period.
Yeah,
that's what the words mean.
St. Jerome's going to trump you as the translator, let me tell you. But
St. Jerome isn't going to trump me at all. St. Jerome... Well, was another Catholic apologist.
Yeah, and which is all there was. Catholic meant universal. Catholic and Christian were the same back then. There was no other Christianity back then. Now, how long are we going? Because we've been on 2.5 hours. What are the rules of
time? I'll run my mouth all night. It don't matter to me.
Well, I'm asking John what the rules are. Doesn't Talk Shoe cut you off at a certain point?
Well, not that I know of. But
I thought Talk Shoe cut the show off after 2 hours.
Yeah, I'm not really. I'm here as a support for Bill. That's it.
Yeah, won't cut us off until I turn it off.
Now, who is talking?
It'll run for as long as we want. I've run 5-hour shows on here where we've thrown around Kool-Aid lipstick and such. But we could go to that. We could go to that angle too. I mean, you guys.
Unfortunately, I have other things to do tonight, but.
We could bring you back another night and we could talk about Christianity.
I'd be glad to do that if you want. The point is that on this show, on the Nazi thing and the Hitler thing and all that, first of all, answer me this, and somebody has brought this up to me in email. How come all these constitutional freedom people have such an affinity for National Socialism and Hitler, which was contrary to many of the constitutional principles?
No, National Socialism was free enterprise. Hitler even explained there were no handouts in National Socialism. National Socialism was reaching down and lifting your brother up. That was Hitler's own words. It was a free enterprise system with no handouts. However, it created opportunity for every Germans came first. That's why it's National Socialism. It's not Marxism. Hitler only absconded the word socialism, okay? He didn't want to let the Jewish definition, that their definition of socialism, stand alone. Now, the thing about fascism is that fascism recognizes, and capitalism doesn't do this, because capitalism is just Jewish vulturism, as you yourself said. Fascism,
well, as vulture capitalism is, but free enterprise capitalism is the opposite.
Recognizes the investment that a community has in the productive members of the community. Oh, okay? In other words, if you're an inventor, right? Let's say you're a great inventor and you invent a wonderful laser weapon, right? Capitalism would take the machines and the know-how to build that laser weapon and send them off to China.
Well, then, no, that is Jewish vulture capitalism that does that. Not
well, well, yes, but that's the capitalism we've operated on for 100 years now. That's why the Chinese are on a par with us now technologically.
Well, that's,
if it weren't for Jewish capitalism, the Chinese would still be beating stones against their grain so they could make bread.
Okay, we don't disagree on that. That's not a disagreement. I'm just saying that you're putting a romantic label. There was no reason in the world.
If Hitler
was a Christian, he would know that socialism had been condemned by the popes and all Christians for a long time. But he wouldn't take it and say, I'm going to rehabilitate.
It's not a traditional socialist.
I'm going to rehabilitate a socialism. That is a Jewish thing. Socialism is Jewish.
No, I said he took the term. He didn't take the concept.
The fact that he had any affinity for socialism, and the same thing goes for Otto Strasser, is indicative that they are Jewish.
He didn't have an affinity for socialism.
Now, why did he use it?
That's where he screwed up.
Why did he use it if he didn't have an affinity for it?
He used the term. His use of the term has to do with the political climate of the time.
The average German wasn't demanding to be
Marxist
socialist.
Principle.
The average German was internally...
Well, you go read Mein Kampf. Instead of letting me finish my explanation, you just go read Mein Kampf. But read it. Read the whole thing.
Look, that is the words. We got then all got to look at the actions, too.
That was his actions. You haven't looked at any of the documentaries from 1939, 1940, 1941 Germany. I mean, that was his action. That's why Germany had a great revival. That's why 95% of the people voted for Adolf Hitler the second time, the second election he had, and I think it was 38.
Well, that's because they had been risen out of the doldrums by the economic recovery.
And they all had an equal share in that recovery and in the national pride that swelled with it. They all had that.
Yeah, and the question is,
It was done without the Rothschild banks. It was done in spite of the Rothschild banks. And that's why the Jews knew that Germany had to be destroyed.
Because if
it went on much longer that the rest of the world saw what Hitler did to Germany, then they would have been saying, hey, we want to do that too. And if politicians came up that wanted to do that in the West, the Jews were toast. That's why they had to destroy Germany.
Well, here's the thing. The question is whether when push came to shove in 1939 and 40 and 41, if the Hitler was just overwhelmed and his intent, or if he had been playing footsie with this plan all along, and at each key moment he gave in and Germany ended up enslaved to this day. That's the question.
Well, Germany was enslaved before Hitler.
Well, and maybe Hitler was the last part of the plan. I mean, the Jews after 1945
If you're a Jew, there's no reason to create a Hitler in 1928, 1929, 1930.
Yes, there is.
No, there's not. Because you already have control of Germany.
No, but
you have full control of Germany. You bought Germany during the Weimar years, but when the German people had no money, that they needed a freaking wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread. And the Jew was the only one that could buy any property because the only one that could buy any property was somebody that could get currency from outside the country.
See, and this is where we probably have a major disagreement. You're not going to accept on this call that the main goal beyond Europe was the takeover of the Vatican on the route to the takeover.
Of course I'm not going to accept that. The Vatican was already taken over by the damn
on the route to the takeover of the world.
But who were the Vatican bankers since the 1700s? The Rothschilds?
No, the Rothschilds got their finger in around 1807 or whatever it was when Pius VII was taken captive by Napoleon. And the Rothschilds sent people to help get Pius IX free behind a few masks. And then they sent their people into the Vatican with Pius VII. And Rothschild back then is quoted as saying, "We'll bore from within until it's an empty shell." The idea that the Jews controlled the Catholic Church, well, the Catholic Church was supporting the Inquisition, was supporting the, which was a great institution. What we need now in America is an Inquisition
Mr. Conrad, let me just interject here. The same situation existed in America before the Revolution, where the King of England denied us our money. the colonial script.
Right, right.
Then it put everybody out of work. I mean, just like in Germany. I mean, the people were in the street because they didn't have gold. Then, and the same situation with Lincoln's greenbacks occurred during the
right.
the war. I mean, this was all Jewish intrigue. This was way before Adolf Hitler. I mean, this is, come on.
I don't know what you're objecting to. I'm agreeing with you on all that.
You're agreeing with me, but you don't want to agree that Hitler was somebody who stood against them, like Abraham Lincoln, like George Washington.
Well, first of all, there was no, you know, that's a good question. Regarding Hitler's, was he standing against them, though, or was he setting up Germany to be defeated in a war that put the Jews in charge of Europe?
Why, when they already controlled it?
They didn't control it enough.
They had full control of Germany all the way up until Hitler got
elected.
But
they didn't have control.
Hitler didn't even get elected. He didn't have a plebiscite. He had to put together a coalition government, and then he had to convince, what's his name, von Hindenburg, or whatever the hell his name was, to make him chancellor. He had to convince them.
Well, but, okay, but the point is that the Jews did not have control of the world like they do now. That World War II is a stepping stone.
No, well, they do have control of that world because nobody will stand up anymore.
No.
The last one that tried to stand up is Jack Kennedy, and they shot him. Every single politician is nothing but a damned whore. They're all whores. We got 100 whores. We got 536 whores on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, well, you don't forget the trafficant went to jail for 7 years because he stood up. And if you want to see.
But he didn't stand up like he could have stood up. Ron Paul stands up a little bit, and trafficking crossed the line. Do you know why they put trafficking in jail? Because he stood up over that John DiMaggio.
That was one reason.
He stood up. I bet that's the primary reason, because he threatened the Jewish stranglehold on Washington with that.
Right,
things. You can get away with just about anything. In fact, you can go around telling them Hitler's a Rothschild agent forever. You'll be their best buddy.
No, that they're trying to suppress that.
I don't know
how
you ain't got elected.
They're trying to suppress that idea that Hitler was a part Jewish. They don't support that. They suppress it for the last.
They don't support you. Jews all over your website. You know what? When the Jews do when they want to embrace them, when they can't destroy somebody's image, they embrace them and they make them one of their own.
They don't.
That's what they're
doing. I don't get any.
Christ.
I don't get any.
Christ wasn't a Jew.
I don't get any favorable comments from Jews. I get some hostile, not as much as from the Hitler apologists. But I don't get any, and I didn't ask for any of their help. I don't get any of their help. I don't get any donations or money from any Jews. I'm quoting. It's more effective to quote somebody who is arguing the opposite that gives you a fact that can't be run over and denied.
Haven't given me a fact yet. Everything you've cited is what a court would call hearsay. It's all secondhand and thirdhand. So-and-so said that about Hitler. And they all happen to have some axe to grind against Hitler.
Well,
that's one or the other.
We got a ton. You say I haven't cited any facts. I've cited the Hitler Jewish soldiers, cited the
That's not a point of contention. The point of contention was whether Hitler was a Rothschild agent.
It's a point. No, there's two points of contention. One is, which you've already conceded, the Nazi Zionist connection.
I haven't conceded that to you. I admitted that before I ever knew you, I ever heard of you.
On this,
that's not a confession.
On this call, I didn't say confession.
I conceded that to you when I agreed with you over it from the beginning.
Okay, and I'm talking about on this discussion debate.
I haven't conceded a damn thing to you. There's things we've agreed about.
All right, well, then.
But you haven't conceded anything. And let me tell you something. Unless you have original documentary evidence that happens to go against everything that Adolf Hitler was about that I know from original documentary evidence, are never going to convince me that Hitler...
Well, so the Van Papen entry in his diaries in 1954 is what? That's not original source?
It looks like Bill hung up.
Bill hung up?
I don't know whether he dropped or he hung up.
Okay. Well, I don't...
Well, we can wrap this up right here. I mean, it's like I said, we've gone for over 2 hours here at this
point. Now, did Mike drop off a long time ago?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, you've been here the whole time, Mike?
Well, yeah, but my phone, I have to either stand on the roof of the house or hang from the ceiling.
Yeah.
It's quite a circus to get my phone even
Okay.
That might work here, and I've kind of made out most of what you guys said the entire show here.
All right.
So,
okay, well, I think we got a lot of things out. I just don't agree. I'd have to – I mean, I could come back on another show and list at the top of the show all the stuff that is not hearsay evidence. Things like Dunkirk and the declaring war on America are public – these are public events, so they're the best.
Right, they are public events.
And so all you can do is have the listener and everybody decide whether what I'm saying makes more sense or what Bill and you are saying makes more sense on those things. No, I don't agree with him at all. We got a ton of factual evidence we put out on that tape, and interpretations could vary, but it's not all hearsay as Bill was just saying.
Well, Bill is back. He can.
Well, I must have overheated my Skype. I'm sorry. It just dropped. I'm an animated type person.
And I'm happy. I got to say, I'm happy to see that Skype, because I thought you were on a regular phone. I'm happy to see that Skype keeps that kind of connection for 2 hours.
Yeah, Skype is my regular phone, and I've done 5 hour programs here.
Yeah.
I have my own Skype, my own talk show channel. I used to do long programs here. I have my own chat server now.
Okay.
I got to tell you guys, it's been quite enlightening listening to both you guys. I got to say, I'd be very interested, and I'm sure a lot of listeners would be very interested to see the Christianity topic brought up.
Well, also, I think that Bill, I think that William has issued a challenge here that we might do a second show on this eventually, and that's this. He's alleged that almost all of my evidence is hearsay, so what I'd like to do is maybe have a show where I list, and I could send the list in advance, because we're not, as I always say to people on this type of a forum, we're not trying to play gotcha. We're not trying to see who can outsmart who on 1 hour or 2 hours. We're trying to get to the truth. So I would send the list of what I believe is not hearsay evidence that we're basing our case on, and then we could discuss each one, whether it's hearsay evidence or not. That might make also an interesting show.
Well, I think if I had one suggestion for you, you got to get rid of the Jews off your web page and put four or five things there that are going to make me want to watch your video, because Shlomo and the slander against Adolf Eichmann is pure undocumented conjecture. Yeah, you know, Yiddish is German. I mean, it's got some Hebrew and some Slavic words. But it's a German base, and of course he spoke some Yiddish.
Well, that would be like
I'm sure every German did that grew up in a city.
If I took the tack you took on the Jewish authors, I'd say I'm not gonna believe anything from Adolf Eichmann because he speaks Yiddish. I mean, that to me would be the same type of comment. But at any rate, you could also.
What I'm saying is Yiddish is German. I mean, that's like
no,
you don't believe.
Yiddish is not German. It's a different language than German.
No, Yiddish is German. It's a language. It's Jewish gutter slang German is what it is.
Does everybody who speaks German understand Yiddish?
So it's
well,
like
they
would
understand all the German words.
I'd like to make a point here. Being to Germany, at least I would say probably 30 or 40 times.
Okay.
There are so many dialects in Germany even today. Many of the people can't even understand different dialects.
I see.
And that's true.
Very small area.
Yeah.
You go to Bible actually did a lot of
cannot like understand other people and so forth. So it's yes, there is a German that everybody understands today, but that hasn't always been the case.
Okay, William, let me ask you this. Why did they have Adolf Eichmann in a soundproof booth when he was on trial?
The Nuremberg trials just aren't my thing, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you why, because if he blurted out any of this cooperation between the Zionists and the German and the Nazis, that would have completely blown the Nuremberg trials. And so,
even American judges have said that most of the prosecutors, most of the investigators, most of the officers that were at Nuremberg, the linguists, they were all Jews.
Yeah, or people in their control.
I see the Nuremberg trial as the Jewish takeover, the official Jewish takeover of Germany, right?
Yeah, but it's still
and they had to eliminate Patton to do that, and that's what they did.
Yeah, but that still doesn't explain, except for my explanation, why they have Adolf Eichmann in a soundproof booth so he can't get out anything unless they let it come out.
Well, that's very plausible because they were probably afraid. I don't know. I don't. Well, I don't know why they had Nuremberg trials. They could have got away with just hanging them all.
Now, what do you and we bring out in? Well, that's a good point. But they had to establish some propaganda that is still believed by most people. I think. What do you make? We address in our video why did they have Hess in prison for 44 years, and the Brits, the Americans, French, and Russians take a week each month and march. You march troops around Spandau Prison, which was made for 300 people, and only Hess sat in there. We addressed
right. And I'm sure they wanted to isolate them so that Hess could never get to tell his story.
Yeah, and because that would have, again, revealed
that doesn't reveal
the Nazi Zionist connection and why Hitler sent him to England to try to one more try to get
the
deal.
Blows apart your whole damn theory, Jim.
Why?
Well, why would Hitler try to make peace at all with England if he was a Zionist agent?
Because he was sending Hess to the Cliveden Group to try to make peace with
them. No. If Hitler's a Zionist agent, he's doing the work of the Rothschilds. He's taking orders.
No, but at that
he
point...
He ain't trying to make peace
nobody.
Taking orders.
Yeah, at that point, he knew he was odd man out in Germany.
Oh, come on!
And Germany was to go down, and he was trying
to
stop it. Why would they?
I'm telling you, there's a lot of dichotomies in what you're saying, and people are going to analyze this podcast. My knowledge of World War II Germany is not perfect. This is not my area.
Well, neither is mine. Neither is
because there's a lot of little battle details and things that John knows that other people know a lot better than me.
Yeah.
But you haven't convinced me of anything.
Well,
and I can see the problems with your story, and it just doesn't add up.
Hess was
Mr. Condit, you know, the Hitler is a Jew theory goes the way it came about is because we saw in our own leaders how they were bought off, how they were Jewish agents, how they were Jews themselves, like Roosevelt, and Woodrow Wilson was an agent because he allowed himself to be taken in that way. Now. And we would extend that to other countries. We've seen it in Churchill, and we figure, well, we might as well extend it to Germany, too. But what we don't realize is that Hitler was not one of them, that's why he got his head handed to us.
That is not any way how I came into looking into this. I did not say, oh, I guess Hitler is here. That, it was at the time he rose to power that hundreds of little German newspapers and the Austrian government said, where did this guy come from? And they uncovered all kinds of stuff, all kinds of Hitlers and Jewish graveyards with Star of David's on it, a cookbook. This is in Bridget Heyman's book.
This is
in Bridget Heyman, who's a Hitler. She is an apologist for your position. Her book, Bridget Heyman's Hitler's Vienna, was an attempt.
Yeah, another storyteller.
An attempt to refute Jetzinger's book, Hitler's Youth, and she says in there, among other things, she uncovered a cookbook written by a Rosalie Hitler that was written in Hebrew. There's all kinds of indications. Oh.
You know something, my last
name? I want to know
what Jews have taken that last name, right?
Where millions of people can realize that it's the truth and have, you know, it's too big to cover up. You know, like the military campaigns of World War II. Now, you can spin Dunkirk any way you want, but Hitler says in his book, written way before that, decades even, that he was an Anglophile, that he loved England. He did not want to embarrass them. That's why he let the British go.
That he forgot that the Rothschilds the Zionists were running England, which he said
he
in his speech.
He felt that the British would be able to handle it.
Why?
Hitler
they weren't handling it up till then.
Hitler made many statements contemporary with the time that he was appealing to the ties of blood with the English people. And there are several videos on my Mein Kampf site that demonstrate that.
Why was Hitler trying to cover up his own ancestry and saying I'll never talk?
He wasn't trying to cover up his ancestry. That's your damned conjecture.
Boy, when
your Jewish story?
When did he get into it? When did he get
into
it?
Where the hell's the proof? William Patrick Hitler is not proof.
When? Why not? What are you saying? Somebody made up the name
William Hitler threw him the hell out. Him and his mother were both trying to capitalize on a relationship with Hitler that they never, ever had.
Numerous sources say he paid William Patrick Hitler the equivalent of $250,000.
What numerous sources? The Jew that wrote the play about him?
No. It's one of them is the who financed? The last of the Hitlers and Bridget Hayman and there's numerous other places that talk about that. I mean, you're just saying it's all illegitimate that William Patrick had Hitler went to Germany, worked for a while somewhere, and then wrote Hitler a letter. Hitler, according to William Patrick, Hitler met with him and screamed at him that nobody's supposed to think of where I came from. I didn't mention one word in Mein Kampf of where I came from, and nobody's supposed to think about it.
He mentioned where he came from. He mentioned his parents' names. He didn't mention his brother or his sister.
Did he mention his what was his ancestry? Did he say he was Austrian or no?
What was the point? He didn't have
to. Well, he didn't.
It's a book, My Struggle. It's a book about his political view.
Well, that fits with what William Patrick Hitler said he told
him. You can go to my Christogenia site, and I probably have 100, 200 essays that I wrote on that site. But you won't find out what my ancestry is.
Will you spell your website? You never did. I asked Mike early on. Every time Mike said it, it glitched. What spell your website so we can get to it?
Christogenia.org. It's C-H-R-I-S-T. O-G-E-N-E-A.
Okay. That's good. I got it. Okay. And I think everybody else that's listening wants to make sure they got it, too.
So, do you have access to the chat room?
I don't know about the chat room.
Oh, you don't know about the chat room.
I mean, I just don't know about it. And I'm not super – I'm not always super good.
Post chat room, both his website and the Mein Kampf project.
Okay. Well,
it is available to anyone who's listening.
Okay.
Oh, I have my own chat server, I think is what Bob's referring to.
And
I'm
so
talking about the TalkShoe.
Oh, no, in the TalkShoe chat room. Okay, he put the links to my site in the TalkShoe chat room.
Okay, now your chat server is linked on your website?
Yeah, I have my own chat server where a lot of us frequent every night. I mean, you're welcome to stop by. I won't bite your head off. But the instructions to get to there are at Christogenia.net.
Okay, fine. Well, here's the thing. I don't know if there'd be interest in that in me trying to list the sources at the beginning of a show that are not hearsay, why we included some things in the books of these Jewish authors, many of which are trying to debunk the facts that they say the fact and then they try to explain it away.
Well, a Jew that's invested in the Holocaust story would be embarrassed about the Zionist cooperation with the Nazis. But the Zionist cooperation with the Nazis in pre-war Germany, it's a natural.
Well,
because the Germans weren't – they had no extermination plan. They wanted to get rid of Germany of Jews, and the easiest way to do that is to make Palestine appealing to them. I mean, that's a natural to me. I mean, go ahead. And you, because of your Catholic views, you have an investment in the traditions of that land.
No, I don't have any. I want to just get to the truth. But I'm not going to jump over. If no Catholic leader helped Hitler get Jews down to Palestine. None of the Catholic leaders were cooperating with him. Not Franco.
No, but they sure as hell are taking some heat for not stopping the Holocaust.
Well, of course, everybody. We're all little concentration camps walking around waiting to happen. If you listen to the Jews, in fact, there's somebody just put up Trafficant on Phil Donahue in 1991, and there's a tremendous exchange in the middle of that show, part two, between a Jew named Rubenstein and Trafficant, and the Jew stands up and says, basically, you bring out that seed of bigotry that is in all of us. And, of course, that's the Jewish line. We're all bigots just waiting to happen rather than people that have been abused so long. We're finally standing up for ourselves. But you might find that interesting, that Phil Donahue Trafficant thing that was just put up. But at any rate, I think that I have to do some other things tonight. But, you know, you can think about it, but I'd be glad to come back on what is hearsay and what is not, why we included some of the books, the quotes from the books we did. You know, Ben Hecht, who again was the assistant writer with David O. Selznick on Gone with the Wind. And if you ever see From Here, I think it's From Here to Eternity. No, Farewell to Arms, the movie Farewell to Arms, written by, based on Hemingway's book. The screenplay writer for that is Ben Hecht, and his name appears as big as the screen right before they start, they go to Farewell for Arms title.
Well, I don't watch movies. You know why I don't watch movies? Because Jews make them.
All right, well, that's...
I haven't seen a movie, and I haven't seen a Hollywood product in at least 20 years.
Yeah, well, I understand that it's a lot of it is poison interjected in. My point is this, though. Ben Heck said in another one of his books that if I was back at the time of Christ, I wouldn't have crucified him. I would have cut him up and feed him to dogs, so there couldn't have been any Christianity. So that's a... You can't make a more horrible statement than that about Christianity. I know that Ben Heck had that evil Talmudic mind, but in the fact that he did have that, and then he is admitting that the Nazis were, that the Zionists, top Zionists like Ben Gurion and Castor were cooperating with the Nazis, that's powerful because it's coming from a Talmudic Jew. That's why
they're all Talmudic Jews in one way or another.
Oh, but that's why we include it, because it's the enemy testifying against himself.
Well, right, but you don't really need that. Having that on the front page of your website isn't going to convince me to go watch your movie.
Might not convince you, but it convinces me.
Because your movie, the point of contention was that Hitler was an active, knowledgeable, knowing Zionist agent, that he was working for the Rothschilds.
He was in agreements. He was in arrangements with the Rothschilds and the Warburgs, yes. That is what the evidence points to.
But he...
How could you be working with the Zionists if you weren't in arrangements with the Rothschilds? They're behind Zionism.
No.
They're not?
Well, Zionism developed separately from the Rothschilds.
Oh, a lot of people disagree with you on that. A lot of people claim the Rothschilds own 80% of the real estate in Israel right this second.
Well, whether that's true or not is immaterial. But Zionism, the idea, Zionism as a Jewish goal, developed independently from the Rothschilds.
I don't know.
It developed amongst rabbinical Jews in Germany and Eastern Europe, probably before Theodor Herzl.
Well, Moses Hess, who was, I think, operating around 1825, talked about using communism, something like Nazism and Zionism, to overcome the Christian world.
Yes, Moses was one of their leading.
So, well, anyway, okay. Well, I guess it's two. Oh, we're going on 10:15, 3 hours here. So why don't we close up? Because I got to do some other things tonight. But if you think about it, and Mike, I guess has heard some of this, or he can hear all of it. I'll email to Mike my thoughts for different possibilities of another show that might be more focused rather than such a wide ranging thing that we did tonight. And of course, we can do the Christianity show at some time.
Okay, well, I'm available 3 nights a week.
Okay, all right. Well, we would just have to pick a night in advance that we could both make it, you know. So.
All right, gentlemen, well, I appreciate having both of you on tonight.
Okay.
And your name's Jim Conner Jr., website's HitlerDVD.com.
And by the
way, of ChrisTheGenia.org and of Mike Delaney.
Say one other thing here, Mike?
I was going to say, I give you guys both a final word in.
I just wanted to say that I appreciate the tone of this show. And that, by that I mean this. I don't think we're leaving at each other's throat personally, but we made our points very vigorously. There's no sense in having a discussion debate if everybody doesn't take all the stops out and make their points as convincingly as they can, yet that doesn't mean we have to end on a note of being personal enemies or anything.
No, I don't have any animosity, Jim, if that's what you mean.
I didn't think you did. That's why I say I appreciate the tone.
I'm always quite animated, right?
And you should be, and I appreciate the tone of the show is what I'm saying, because I like hard debate but not silly, bad feelings for no reason, you know.
Okay, well, we'll talk again.
Okay, thanks, everybody. Good night. Good night. Bye-bye.
All right, good night. Bob, is it the end show now, terminate show now?